DH Audio presents Dakota Born by Debbie Maycomer. Performed by Karen Carbone.
We're doomed, Jacob Hansen said in sepulchral tones. He marched into the room, shaking his grizzled head. You might as well board up the entire town right now. Marta Hansen followed her husband into the dining room at Buffalo Bob's Three of a Kind, the local bar, grill, and hotel. She plunked herself down at the table with the other members of the Buffalo Valley Town Council. Joshua McKenna, president of the town council, figured this kind of pessimism pretty much ensured that they wouldn't accomplish anything. Not that he blamed the couple. For nearly 20 years, the Hansons, along with everyone else in Buffalo Valley, had watched the once-thriving farm community deteriorate. Now, the town was barely holding on. Businesses survived as long as they could, on their continually diminishing returns, until they were driven to financial ruin and finally forced to close up shop. The theater had closed first, and then the beauty shop, and the florist, and the hardware store. Then the Morningside Cafe, the one decent restaurant in town, had closed for good. Somehow, a lot of the farmers in the area had managed to keep going, because they believed in their heritage and because they trusted in the future, hoping they'd eventually get a fair price for their crops. Since they stayed, a few of the businesses in town clung to. Joshua's was one of them, although he'd certainly been struggling for the last while. He sold used goods and antiques, and did repairs. In that area, at least, business was steady. It was his gift, he supposed, to be able to fix things. He just wished his talent extended to fixing lives and rearranging circumstances. If it had, he'd start with his own family. His wife, Marjorie, had always dealt with their children, Sarah and Jeb, but she'd been gone 10 years now. He often wondered if she'd recognize Buffalo Valley these days, and wished he had her wisdom in dealing with its problems. "We're doomed this time," Marta repeated, daring anyone to argue with her. Hassie Knight, owner of Knight's Pharmacy, spoke. "This town survived all these years. We'll hold on now." Hassie was a born optimist, and the one person in town who was sure to see even this situation in a positive light. If anyone could come up with a solution, it'd be Hassie, God bless her. Like Joshua, Hassie had experienced her share of grief. She'd buried her son, who'd been killed in Vietnam nearly 30 years ago, and not long afterward had lost her husband. Her daughter lived in Hawaii, and Joshua knew Valerie would like nothing better than to have her mother retire nearby. Thankfully, Hassie had resisted Valerie's efforts. The old woman was long past the age of retirement, but she did much more than fill prescriptions. Hassie was the closest thing the community had to a doctor, and folks from miles around came to her for medical advice. "We've hung on for so many years, we're already dead and don't even have the sense to know it," Marta said caustically as she crossed her arms over her hefty bosom. "You and Jacob have as much to gain or lose as the rest of us," Hassie snapped. "A positive mental attitude would help, you know."
"I'm positive," Jacob said with a nod. "Positive that Buffalo Valley is as dead as Eloise Patton. If she was going to up and die unexpected like that, the least she could have done was tell someone she wasn't well," Marta said in her usual righteous manner.
"Marta, that's the most ridiculous thing you've ever said, which is really saying something." Hassie's face was red, and Joshua could see she was having difficulty restraining her temper. The truth was, the Hansons exasperated him, too. How they had managed to run the grocery during these hard times, when they had such a negative outlook toward life, was beyond him.
"All right, all right."
Joshua wiped his brow with a stained white handkerchief.
"We'll move on to new business." "We all know why we're here," Jacob said. "Now that Eloise is dead, the school needs a teacher. It's either that or lose everything. So hire one."
Buffalo Bob leaned back on two legs of his chair, as if he figured they were all overreacting to this crisis. Bob Carr was an ex-biker who'd settled in the town a couple of years earlier after winning the bar, grill, and small hotel in a poker game. He'd immediately rechristened himself Buffalo Bob.
"We could always advertise."
Dennis Ehrlicher, who owned the Senex gas station, could be counted on to cut to the chase, to state the basic, unadorned facts.
He owned and operated the only gas station left in town and wasn't much of a talker. When he did speak, it was generally worth listening. Joshua knew that his daughter, Sarah, and Dennis had some kind of romance going between them, despite the decided efforts of his daughter to keep it a secret. Joshua didn't understand why she felt it was so all-fired important nobody know about this relationship. After her disastrous marriage to Willie Stern, Joshua would have welcomed Dennis into the family. He suspected that Sarah's reluctance to marry Dennis had to do with her daughter, Calla, who was 14, a difficult age, as he remembered well.
"We could throw in living quarters, couldn't we?"
Buffalo Bob was saying.
"For the teacher?"
Joshua pointed the gavel at the hotel owner.
"Good idea. There's two or three empty houses close to the school."
"No one's going to want to teach in a town that's dying," Jacob grumbled, shaking his head.
As if on cue, Marta nodded. Joshua refused to let the Hansons' pessimism influence the meeting any longer.
"We'll find a teacher. We aren't going to let the school close."
"I second that," Hassie said.
A deep sense of relief showed on her face, and the determination in her voice matched Joshua's. They had both lived their entire life in this place, and they'd do whatever they could to save it. Come hell or high water, they'd find a teacher before school started up again at the end of August.
"I'll believe it when I see it,"
Jacob Hansen said, just loudly enough for them all to hear.
"Well then, prepare to believe," Hassie said grandly.
There was more life in Buffalo Valley than either of the Hansons suspected, and Hassie was going to prove it. Lindsay Snyder felt the anger churning in her stomach, anger at her own foolishness as much as anything. With her dogs sound asleep at her feet, she sat at her kitchen table and wrote in the pages of her journal. Whenever she was upset, she described her feelings. It helped her clarify them, helped her analyze what had happened and why. This time, though, she already knew the answers. Monty was never going to marry her. She should have recognized it 2 years ago, and hadn't. She didn't see it because she so desperately wanted to be his wife, wanted to have a family with him. She loved him, and wasn't marriage supposed to be the natural outcome of loving a man? But she'd allowed herself to see what she'd hoped to see. She'd allowed herself to believe she could convince him. Monty hadn't lied to her, hadn't misled her. From the beginning, he'd told her he wasn't interested in marriage. He loved her, he said, but his divorce several years earlier had devastated him, and he'd vowed not to repeat the experience. He'd never indicated in any way that he might change his mind. Lindsay knew there was only one person to blame for her unhappiness, and it wasn't Monty. Soon, maybe 6 months after their relationship had begun, she'd left him because he'd been adamant on the subject of marriage. He'd persuaded her to come back, and she had, foolishly believing that eventually he'd change his mind and see things the way she did. It hadn't happened. The phone rang, and Lindsay glanced at the caller ID, relieved and at the same time depressed to see that it wasn't his number.
"Hello," she mumbled into the phone.
"It's Maddie."
"I know."
"Hey, it's a beautiful summer afternoon, and you sound like you've just lost your best friend. However, I know that can't be the case, because I'm your best friend."
Lindsay sighed, wondering why Maddie had to seem so carefree and happy when her own world was falling apart.
"Nothing's wrong." "Let me amend that. Nothing's wrong that hasn't been wrong for the past 2 years."
"Ah, then this has to do with Monty. What happened?"
"Nothing. Monty and I went out to dinner last night and took a romantic ride in a horse-drawn carriage around Chippewa Square. The magnolias were blooming, and Maddie, oh, it was perfect. Until..."
"Until what?"
Lindsay squeezed her eyes shut because even saying the words caused her pain.
"Until I made the mistake of mentioning the future. The way he reacted, you'd think that was a dirty word. The next thing I knew, he was angry with me and we were arguing. And then I saw what I should have recognized all along. Monty is never going to marry me."
"Are you breaking it off?"
"Yes, I already did. It's over, Maddie."
"You don't sound absolutely certain of that."
"No, I mean it this time. Nothing he says is going to convince me to change my mind. I refuse to do this to myself anymore. It's time I opened my eyes and faced reality. I refuse to put my life on hold any longer.
Way to go, Lindsay. I know it's hard, but you'll be okay. One day your prince will come, and so will mine.
Lindsay shrugged wordlessly. It wasn't as though she thought marriage was essential to a woman's existence, but she craved the closeness of a good marriage and the joys of having children. Maddie, she knew, did too. But here they were, both nearly 30 and not a husband in sight. Maddie, at least, had an excuse. As a social worker for the state of Georgia, she worked long hours, looking out for the welfare of others. She wanted to save the world, and she had a heart big enough to do it. Lindsay had no such ambition. Following her high school graduation, she'd gone to college at the University of Georgia and roomed with Maddie for 4 years. Her degree was in French, a lot of good that had done her, with a minor in education. After graduation, she'd drifted from one job to another. The closest she'd come to using her French had been a summer job at the perfume counter in an upscale department store. Then, almost 4 years ago, the woman who worked in the accounting office of her Uncle Mike's huge furniture store in Savannah had gotten sick, and Lindsay had filled in. Mrs. Hudson hadn't returned, and Lindsay had taken over permanently. Monty Turner had come to work as a salesman for her uncle 2 years later. The minute they were introduced, Lindsay had fallen for him. She hadn't dated anyone but Monty since. And now, here she was, alone.
Listen,
Maddie said excitedly, interrupting Lindsay's morose thoughts.
My boss insisted I take 2 weeks off. She's afraid I'm going to burn out if I don't get away. So, as of next Friday, I'm on vacation. Come with me. You need to escape as much as I do. And if you're serious about breaking it off with Monty, this will be the perfect way to make it quick and clean. Dragging it out isn't going to do either of you any good.
Maddie was right, and Lindsay instinctively knew it. Where do you want to go? Europe?
I can't afford that. How about a driving vacation? There's so many places in this country I've never seen.
That sounded good to Lindsay. Maddie had recently bought a new car, and they could share expenses.
I've always wanted to see Yellowstone Park.
It's fabulous.
You've been?
As a kid. You know my dad's from North Dakota. He was born and raised in Buffalo Valley. We drove out to see the old homestead a couple of times while I was growing up. My grandparents' house is still there. It's never sold.
The old homestead?
No, Lindsay said. My grandparents sold the farm back in the early 70s and moved into town. From what I understand, the place has been listed with a reputable real estate company all this time. I wouldn't mind checking it out. Yellowstone Park isn't that far. At least, I don't think it is. We could head for Yellowstone and visit Buffalo Valley on the way.
Sounds like a great idea, Lindsay. I can't wait.
Lindsay knew her uncle wouldn't mind her taking a vacation, and her family would be pleased when she told them her plans. Despite herself, she wondered what Monty would think. She didn't have long to wait. After 4 days, during which they'd pretended to ignore each other, Monty showed up at her office. Lindsay had known that eventually he would, and she'd been alternately dreading and longing for the conversation all week.
I heard you and Maddie are driving across the country.
Monty was obviously annoyed that he'd heard of her plans from someone else.
Two women alone. It's not safe, Lindsay. If you're angry with me, fine, be angry. But we both know you'll get over it soon enough. I already have. We had an argument. We've had them in the past and probably will again. Let's put it behind us and move on, but don't do anything stupid.
I am over it, she assured him sweetly. Our relationship is finished, Monty. I meant what I said.
You don't mean that, he hesitated. Lindsay, I really am sorry about Friday night. We were both upset. You know how I feel about you. Why don't you wait till I can take some time off, and I'll go with you?
Monty did love her. In her heart of hearts, Lindsay believed that. She would never have stayed with him this long otherwise. Seeing him now, so handsome, his expression so caring, she found it hard to think of her life without him.
Marry me, Monty,
she pleaded before she could stop herself. His eyes filled with regret. As soon as she'd said the words, she wanted to grab them back. She'd done it again, tried to change a situation that couldn't be changed. Sorrow washed over her, and she shook her head hopelessly.
You're going without me? He murmured.
without you.
That was the only way she could think clearly. The only way she could teach her heart to forget him.
When are you leaving?
He asked in a resigned voice.
Saturday morning.
Monty buried his hands deep inside his pants pockets.
2 weeks?
She nodded.
Will you phone me? At least give me that much. Just a quick call so I'll know you're all right.
Lindsay shook her head again.
Please, don't make this any more difficult than it already is.
She couldn't. Talking to him would be too painful, too risky.
I'll miss you, Monty said quietly.
He hesitated before he turned and walked out the door. It was after 10 once Gage Sinclair had parked the tractor and finished cleaning his equipment. He'd been in the field from dawn to dusk, cutting alfalfa, and he was weary to the bone. As he walked toward the house, he saw his mother sitting on the porch, her fingers busy with her latest knitting project. Generally, she was in bed by this time, since she was up before dawn, feeding and caring for the animals and the garden. With the hottest part of the summer almost upon them, it made sense to finish chores in the cool of the morning. Gage looked for Kevin, but his 17-year-old brother, a half-brother, actually, was nowhere to be seen. The boy was an object of frustration to Gage. Gage had been 15 when his mother remarried to John Betts after 10 years as a widow. Gage had been 18 when Kevin was born. John had died when Kevin was 5, so Gage had been more father than brother to him. In another few years, Kevin would be taking over the farm from Gage. It had, after all, been left to Kevin, not Gage, by Kevin's father. Naturally, Gage would be around to guide and advise him, but the land belonged to Kevin, and he would have to assume his responsibilities. Unfortunately, the land didn't hold his heart, not the way it should. At this point in his life, Kevin thought about only 2 things, his girlfriend Jessica and his sketchbook. He did what was asked of him, but with little pride and less joy. Gage, on the other hand, couldn't imagine doing anything else. Farming was his life, and like generations before him, he felt most alive when his eyes were filled with grit, his lips chapped, and his neck red with sunburn. The land sustained his soul. If he never left North Dakota, it would suit him just fine. He knew plenty of farmers who'd lived their entire lives without ever traveling outside the state. Whether you raised crops or livestock, the land meant responsibility, day in, day out. A man didn't leave behind what was most important to him. Lita set aside her knitting and stood as he approached the house. Gage realized she'd been waiting for him.
Hassie phoned about the council meeting. Do you want to know what happened?
I figure you're going to tell me.
Gage stepped onto the porch, but tired as he was, resisted sitting down for fear that once he did, he wouldn't want to get up.
Hassie's going to contact the teachers' union about getting a replacement. That's what they decided at the meeting.
Gage's respect for Hassie was high, but she wasn't a miracle worker. It was nearly July, and school was scheduled to start again toward the end of August. He hated to be a pessimist, but it simply wasn't going to happen. Not at this late date. They would have no choice but to close the school.
Don't worry, Gage. Everything will work out.
Mom, we don't know that. We have to think about what's going to happen to Kevin if the school shuts down. I suspect most families will ship their teens off to live with relatives, but it would be doing Kevin a disservice to send him away to finish high school. It's time he accepted responsibility for the farm. Would you consider letting him homeschool?
Gage was well aware of all the problems with that solution. He knew it wasn't ideal. Especially for Kevin, who was too undisciplined to learn without the structure of classes, exams, and deadlines. But it was the best he'd come up with. His mother sighed.
I know Kevin will be taking over the farm, but he's entitled to a decent high school education. Homeschooling won't give him that. You have to have faith,
Lita told him, as if simply believing would make everything turn out right.
The good Lord knows what he's doing.
Gage wasn't going to argue with his own mother, but if the good Lord had any intention of finding a high school teacher for Buffalo Valley High School, he'd better start working fast. Besides, if Gage was going to indulge in a bit of wishful thinking, he might as well add his own requirements.
Send a teacher, he mused, gazing at the heavens. But not just any teacher. Someone young and pretty and single. Someone smart and loving. Someone who likes kids and animals.
send a woman just for me.
He nearly laughed out loud. Talk about an imagination.
Are you going to sleep your life away?
Lindsay chided as she set a plastic cup of steaming coffee on Maddie's nightstand. Her friend rolled over and stared up at Lindsay through half-closed eyes.
What time is it?
It's 8 o'clock, Lindsay told her. Sitting on the bed opposite Maddie's, she crossed her legs and sipped her own coffee. They'd arrived in Minneapolis the day before, and after finding a motel, had gone straight to the Mall of America. Savannah had its share of shopping malls, but nothing that compared to the 400-plus stores and amusement park inside this one. Their excursion had ended with dinner and a movie, and all without leaving the massive mall.
It's 8 already? Can't be, Maddie protested.
Sure is. Lindsay had always liked mornings, even as a teenager. It was a trait she didn't share with her best friend. Maddie woke up one brain cell at a time.
Will we make Buffalo Valley today?
Maddie asked, finally tossing aside the bedspread and heading toward the bathroom.
We will if you get a move on.
While Maddie dressed, Lindsay studied the maps. By her calculations, they should arrive in Buffalo Valley by late afternoon. From Minneapolis, they'd drive toward Fargo and take Highway 29 to Grand Forks, get onto Highway 2 and go as far as Devil's Lake, then head north from there. As she refolded the maps, she glanced at the telephone.
Don't you dare!
Maddie said, framed in the bathroom doorway, the handle of her toothbrush sticking out of her mouth.
What? You were thinking of calling Monty.
Lindsay didn't admit or deny it, but that was exactly what she'd had in mind. Cutting him out of her life was 100 times more difficult than she'd imagined it would be. He'd been an important part of her everyday life, and she felt lost without him. If it was this difficult now, she could only imagine how much harder it would be once she returned to Savannah. By 8:30, they were on the road, music blaring from the tape deck. They ate a late lunch outside Grand Forks, then made their way west to Devil's Lake. The minute they drove north toward her father's boyhood home, Lindsay grew quiet. All she could see from the road, in either direction, was field after field of wheat, moving with the wind, rippling like waves on the sea. The temperature had soared. It was close to 100 degrees, and the Bronco's air conditioning system, blowing at full speed, couldn't keep the heat completely at bay. Lindsay didn't mind. In fact, she loved it. Loved the bright intensity of the sun. Loved the sight of wheat fields, and this land where her grandparents had forged a good life. She was conscious of gazing upon her own heritage, and with it came a keen sense, an intuition almost, that North Dakota would help her discover the woman she really was.
Dad said we could check in with Hassie Knight when we reached town, Lindsay mentioned. Hassie? Maddie repeated. What an unusual name.
She runs the town's pharmacy, and is apparently something of an institution. The pharmacy's the old-fashioned kind, with a soda fountain.
Hassie has the key to my grandparents' house. I told Dad I'd check it out while we're here.
They rode in silence until Maddie said,
You're thinking about Monty again, aren't you?
Lindsay stared out the window at the wheat fields.
Yes, I'm worried about what'll happen once I get home. If I was at the store now, he'd be making excuses to come into accounting, chipping away at my resolve, and before I knew it, everything would be back the way it was.
Maddie sighed.
You've heard me say this before, so bear with me. Either you accept the fact that Monty's never going to marry you and go on as you were, or break off the relationship entirely. I know you have broken up with him, but I also know you want to take him back. Don't, because you'll never get what you need from him.
You make it sound so simple, Lindsay protested.
It is simple, but that doesn't mean it's easy.
How can I avoid him? Lindsay cried out in frustration. We work in the same place. It's impossible not to see him every day.
It wasn't likely her uncle would fire his best salesman over what he considered a lover's spat, nor would she want him to. Still, it made for an uncomfortable situation all around. Naturally, she could look for work elsewhere, but she enjoyed her job, and there were benefits in working for her uncle that she didn't want to relinquish.
That isn't the real problem, though, is it? Maddie asked.
Briefly, Lindsay closed her eyes.
No. I've broken up with Monty once before, a year and a half ago, remember? And I'm afraid the same thing's going to happen again. I told myself it was over, and I meant it. I insisted that nothing he could say or do, short of arriving with a wedding license, would make me change my mind. He wore you down then, and you're afraid he'll do it again. Lindsay nodded. Monty had pleaded with her, sent her cards, gifts, flowers, courted her. He wanted to maintain their relationship, but he wanted it on his terms. And he liked things just the way they'd always been. No change and no commitment. No formality and no promises.
What's wrong with me, Maddie? Lindsay wailed. Am I really so weak?
No. Maddie's response was emphatic.
Then why am I stuck in a relationship that makes me this miserable?
Maddie studied the road. I'm a social worker, not a counselor, but I'm also your friend. It's like I said, either you accept what Monty's willing to offer, or you get out of the relationship and stay out.
I don't know if I can, she murmured.
Monty had already made it clear. He didn't intend to lose her, nor would he give her what she wanted.
He genuinely cares about me, and he knows I care for him, too.
I realize all that, Maddie concurred. But he's using you. You're convenient, fun, and you love him. He needs that. He needs you. But not enough to marry me and have children with me. She continually had to remind herself of that. She envied her sisters their families. Whenever she spent time with her nieces and nephews, she came away with a hollow feeling deep inside, a longing for children of her own. Maddie's look was sympathetic.
I'm watching the best years of my life go down the drain, Lindsay said. I want children. I really do.
That was the crux of the matter. With her 30th birthday fast approaching, Lindsay was beginning to feel a sense of urgency, a desire to anchor her life with a husband and family.
Well, then, the only way you'll ever be free of him is to stick to your guns. You've broken it off. Don't change your mind, and don't let him change it for you.
They drove in silence for 10 or 15 minutes, each caught up in her own thoughts. The plains continued, mile after mile of flat golden land, with an occasional farmhouse in the distance. Before Lindsay left Savannah, her parents had warned her that Buffalo Valley had changed, but nothing could have prepared her for the shock. Lindsay's 20-year-old memories of Buffalo Valley were still vivid. At one time, Buffalo Valley had been the picture of small-town America, with a flag flying high above the post office and banners across Main Street.
My goodness, she whispered as they drove down the main street.
There were potholes in the road, and the pavement was badly cracked. A number of the stores were boarded up. The large plastic sign for the catalog store was torn, and half of it was missing. The windows were smudged and dirty. The movie theater, with its sign advertising 25-cent popcorn, had obviously been vandalized. At the end of the road, the gas station with its old-fashioned rounded pumps looked like it belonged on a postcard from the 1950s. The most prominent business was Buffalo Bob's three-of-a-kind bar and grill and hotel.
At least there's a place we can spend the night, Maddie said, with what sounded like relief.
The only brick building in town was the bank, which still seemed to be in operation. The grocery was next to that, and something called the Old Country Store, which sold antiques and such. A sign in the window boasted that there wasn't anything Joshua McKenna couldn't repair.
That must be the pharmacy,
Maddie said, as she parked the Bronco on the side of the street. Compared to the other businesses, the drugstore looked clean and fresh. Painted white, it stood out like a beacon in the center of town. A large sign propped against the corner of one window read, Teacher Wanted.
I don't know about you, Lindsay said, but I could use a nice tall vanilla ice cream soda.
I could use something,
Maddie agreed, and followed her inside.
Can I help you?
An older woman called from the back of the store.
Hassie Knight?
Lindsay asked the woman. She nodded.
Who might you be?
Lindsay Snyder.
Gina's granddaughter!
Hassie hurried out from behind the counter and held out her arms as if greeting long-lost family.
Your father phoned and told me you were planning to drop by.
My, oh my, let me take a good look at you.
Before Lindsay could object, she was wrapped in a warm embrace.
This is my friend, Maddie.
Pleased to meet you, Maddie. Hassie hugged her, too.
Oh, my. It's certainly good to see you. Set yourself down at the counter and let me make you the best soda in 200 miles.
She led them to the far side of the pharmacy. Not needing a second invitation, Lindsay and Maddie slid onto the stools.
I have the key to the house, but I hope you're not planning to spend the night there, Hassie said, as she scooped vanilla ice cream into tall, narrow glasses.
Oh, no. Dad told me we'd need to find other accommodation.
Buffalo Bob will fix you up,
Hassie assured them both, setting their sodas in front of them.
Now, don't let his appearance give you any worry. He's gentle as can be.
How many people live in Buffalo Valley these days? Maddie asked, between long sips. Hassie hesitated for a moment.
30 years ago, we had around 500 or so, counting the farmers and their families. Saturday evenings, this town was bustling.
And now?
Hassie shrugged. Less than half that, I guess. Closer to 200 would be more like it. The last 20 years have been hard on farmers. Real hard.
Lindsay nodded.
I see you're looking for a teacher, she said next, motioning toward the sign in the window.
Hassie perked up right away. Either of you interested?
Sorry, Maddie said, raising one hand. I've already got a job.
What's it pay?
Lindsay didn't know why she bothered to ask. Curiosity, she supposed.
You applying for the job?
Excitement flashed in Hassie's blue eyes.
No, Lindsay laughed and shook her head.
You have a minor in education, don't you?
Maddie reminded her. Lindsay glared at her friend.
We need a teacher in the worst way,
Hassie gazed at her, eyes bright with hope.
Move to Buffalo Valley?
Her? As a teacher? It was enough to make Lindsay choke on her drink. Gage Sinclair had spent the morning riding the field cultivator down the long rows of maturing corn. He had nearly 1,000 acres planted in corn, 200 less than the previous year. If the weather held, he could expect to clear 100 bushels per acre. But if there was one thing he'd learned in his years of farming, it was not to count his bushels before the harvest. His mother was waiting for him when he parked the cultivator and climbed down.
Lunch is ready, she called when she saw him.
I'll be there in a minute, he called back, looking around for his half-brother. Gage hadn't seen Kevin all morning, and he suspected the boy had stolen away to be with his girlfriend Jessica again. Gage washed up, then walked into the kitchen, inhaling the mouth-watering aroma of freshly baked bread.
Where's Kevin?
He asked, pulling out a chair. Lita glanced up, surprised.
I thought he was with you.
I told him to change the oil in the pickup when he finished his chores, he said between enormous bites of his sandwich.
He did that a couple of hours ago. He's probably drawing up in the hayloft.
Gage heaved an exasperated sigh. Drawing was all well and good, but it wasn't serious. Not for them. Not like farming. But Gage couldn't force Kevin to care about something he obviously didn't. He lived with the hope that eventually the boy would appreciate the rhythm of life played out each year on the farm. That he'd learn to see the particular beauty that was so much a part of his inheritance.
I need to drive into town this afternoon, his mother told him when he'd finished lunch.
She hesitated, then added,
You could use a haircut.
Gage ran his hand through his hair, knowing she was right. Cutting hair wasn't something she especially liked.
She'd do it, but preferred if he had Hassie take a pair of scissors to his thick head.
Grumbling under his breath, Gage washed, changed his shirt, and dragged a brush through his hair. It was nearly a month since he'd last been to town. Not that there was much to see these days. He'd have Hassie cut his hair, if she had time, and then share a beer or two and some conversation with whoever was over at Buffalo Bob's.
I left a note for Kevin, his mother told him when he joined her.
She had a basket of eggs over her arm, her purse, and a vase full of flowers. The eggs and flowers were for Hassie in exchange for the haircut. Like him, Lita never expected anything without payment. As a farmer, Gage often skimped on luxuries, but he'd never run short on pride. The 30-minute ride into town went quickly.
You recognize that car?
His mother motioned toward the new Bronco parked in front of the pharmacy.
Can't say I do.
My,
his mother exclaimed. Look how clean it is! Most folks didn't bother to wash their vehicles more than once or twice a year, if that. No need to show off the rust. In any case, it was a waste of time, since a vehicle parked near a barn would be caked in mud again as soon as it was driven out of the yard. Gage could hear Hassie talking up a storm, even before they entered the pharmacy. One glance at the two women sitting at the soda fountain told him they were from the city. Some southern city, he guessed, judging by the slight and very attractive drawl. Atlanta? New Orleans? Their skin was pale as winter wheat, and their clothes looked like they came out of a fashion magazine. Gage didn't know anyone from Buffalo Valley who dressed in such bright colors. Both were young, blonde, and pretty, and he couldn't imagine what would bring them to Buffalo Valley.
Lita! Gage!
Hassie greeted them both with enthusiastic fondness.
Come meet Lindsay Snyder and her friend Maddie Washburn. They're visiting here from Savannah. Imagine that! Lindsay is Anton and Gina's granddaughter.
Gage touched the rim of his cap and nodded in their direction. His mother reacted with characteristic pleasure and started chatting about old times and what a dear person Gina Snyder had been. Seeing that he'd walked in on a hen party, Gage was eager to make his escape. He would have left immediately if not for Lindsay Snyder. He'd given her a perfunctory glance, but noticed the way her gaze stayed on him. Their eyes met again and held. Seemingly embarrassed, she offered him a small, apologetic smile and looked away. Gage quickly excused himself.
I'll be over at Buffalo Bob's, he said as he hurried out the door.
Getting his hair cut could wait.
Tell Bob he's going to have guests tonight,
Hassie shouted after him, looking pleased with herself. Gage didn't think the two visitors would be eager to linger in this town, but he'd pass the word on to Buffalo Bob and leave it at that. Brandon Wyatt sat in the bar off the restaurant in the Three of a Kind, and Gage climbed onto the stool next to his friend and neighbor. The place was dim and mercifully cool, and he could hear Garth Brooks in the background.
Get you a beer?
Buffalo Bob asked him. Gage nodded. Bob, ex-biker and now the owner of this establishment, was the only man Gage knew who wore his hair in a ponytail. For that matter, he wore a black leather vest year-round. Still had a Harley, too.
Howdy, neighbor,
Gage said to Brandon. Brandon glanced over at him.
Good to see you.
Gage had known Brandon his entire life. Their properties adjoined each other, and they'd shared just about everything farmers do over the years.
How are Joni and the kids?
Gage asked, raising the cold beer bottle to his lips. He'd heard through the grapevine that Brandon and his wife had been having some difficulties of late.
Everyone's fine.
It was the clipped way Brandon said it that alerted Gage to trouble, making him think that the rumors he'd heard were true. He stared at his friend and wondered if he should ask. He decided against it. Brandon would come to him if he wanted advice, which he seldom did. That wasn't how they did things. They were independent men who mostly kept their own counsel. As far as friends went, Brandon was about the closest one Gage had, but they rarely spoke, rarely spent time together. If he needed anything, though, he could count on Brandon, just like his neighbor could count on him. They'd gotten together more often before Brandon married Joni, but that had been 8 or 9 years ago. Brandon had gone to Fargo to buy a new tractor, and the following weekend had found an excuse to return to the city. Soon he was spending as much time there as he was on his own farm. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out there was a woman involved. Within the year, Joni and Brandon were married. A daughter and son followed soon after, a little more than 2 years apart. They were 8 and 6, if he remembered right. Cute kids. Gage didn't know Joni all that well, but from remarks his mother let drop, he suspected she hadn't made the transition to farm life as easily as the couple had hoped. Life on a North Dakota farm could get desperately lonely for women, especially in the winter months, when it wasn't unheard of to go 2 or 3 weeks without even leaving the house. Women, especially women not born to this life, seemed to think that sounded romantic until they experienced it themselves. Gage's mind wandered away from Brandon and Joni to the two women visiting at Hassie's. Both seemed vibrant and full of energy. He'd have to be a dead man not to notice. Over the years, Gage had given some thought to marriage, but time and opportunity had worked against him. It wasn't like single women were exactly plentiful around here. He had to be realistic, and his chances of meeting someone in Buffalo Valley were slim to none.
All that meant was that he had to venture further afield. He had to be realistic in other ways, too. He wasn't going to appear on any of those He-Man calendars, but he was fairly good-looking. He possessed a strong work ethic and had a powerful sense of what was important. True, he was responsible for his mother and Kevin, but if he did find a woman willing to marry him, he'd take the necessary steps to care for their needs and see to his own and his wife's as well. As far as he knew, there were only two eligible women in the vicinity, and he'd known them his entire life. Sarah Stern, used to be McKenna, was one. She had already been married once. Her ex-husband had been a crazy kind of guy, impulsive and unpredictable, and it hadn't taken long for their marriage to fall apart. Now she lived with her father, Joshua, and made quilts to support herself and her teenage daughter, Calla. But she had something going with Dennis Ehrlicher, owner of the Senex gas station, and that put her off limits. The other possibility was Rachel Fisher, a widow with a 10-year-old son. Her husband had died of leukemia when the boy was about 6. Gage had heard that she was trying to convert her parents' old restaurant, the Morningside Cafe, into a pizza restaurant that would be open on weekends for pickup and in-town delivery. He'd given some serious thought to asking her out, but while he'd been trying to make up his mind, Heath Quantrill, manager of the Buffalo County Bank, beat him to it.
The story is continued on the other side of the cassette.
The fact was, neither of the women really appealed to Gage, and if he was going to all the effort of seeking one out, he should feel something. He believed that when he did meet the right woman, he'd know, but at 35, Gage suspected it might be too late.
"Who's that over at Hassie's?"
Buffalo Bob asked. He tossed a dish towel over his shoulder and eyed the Bronco parked across the street.
"Anton and Gina Snyder's granddaughter. She's in town with a friend," Gage told him. "They used to live here, the Snyders. Hassie seems to think the ladies will put up here for the night."
That information cheered Buffalo Bob.
"Great. I could use the business."
Gage suspected they'd be among the few guests the hotel had all summer.
"She going to be the new teacher?"
The thought hadn't occurred to Gage.
"I doubt it."
With a morose and uncommunicative Brandon Wyatt sitting next to him, Gage finished off his beer and ordered a second. Again and again, his gaze was drawn across the street. A couple of times he thought he heard the sound of women's laughter coming from Hassie's, but he could have imagined it. His imagination seemed to have shifted into overdrive, and his head was filled with thoughts of Lindsay Snyder. He couldn't recall the other woman's name now. Lindsay's blue eyes had sparkled with laughter, and during those few seconds they'd stared at each other, he could almost feel the joy bubbling just beneath the surface. Within those few seconds, he'd recognized that she was someone he'd like to know better. But there was no reason for her to stay. By morning, she'd be back on the road. A deep loneliness came over him. Gage had experienced it before, and life had taught him that, given time, it would pass. Life had taught him something else, too. The land demanded a farmer's first allegiance and wouldn't lightly accept his sharing that love and loyalty with another. This was a lesson Brandon was only now beginning to understand, and Gage intended to learn from his neighbor's mistakes. Refreshed and rejuvenated from her two-week vacation, Lindsay hadn't been home an hour, hadn't even picked up the dogs from her parents yet, when Monty showed up at her apartment door, holding a huge bouquet of long-stemmed red roses. The flowers were beautiful, but even more beautiful was the look on Monty's face. Without a word, it told her how much he'd missed her, how bereft he'd felt while she was away. That look alone was worth every miserable moment they'd been apart. It was a mistake to be this happy, to feel such undiluted joy, but Lindsay couldn't help herself.
"Welcome home," he said at last.
"Oh, Monty." She covered her mouth with one hand, hardly able to believe he'd come. Before another moment passed, she was in his arms.
"I've been lost without you," he whispered between kisses. "Never again. I know you said you wanted to break things off, but I'm hoping you've come to your senses. Tell me you have."
"I did miss you." She couldn't lie, but the truth was more than she wanted to confess. She loved him. She'd missed him, but nothing had changed. Nothing was going to change. And as she acknowledged this, her joy at seeing him began to dissolve.
in an effort to diminish the growing intimacy, she carried the roses into the kitchen.
"I've done nothing but think about you," Monty told her, following her.
He leaned against the counter, gazing steadily at her.
"You've had 2 weeks. Surely you've come to your senses, haven't you?"
"Yes, I suppose I have."
She sounded so weak, so unsure. She was weak, but her resolve was growing stronger. She refused to let him talk her out of the very things that were most important to her. Monty sighed.
"Thank heaven for that."
It took him a moment to realize she was still standing on the other side of the room.
"Come here, sweetheart. Let me show you how much I've missed you."
"I don't think you understand."
"You said you'd come to your senses."
"I have, and it's over, Monty. Unless you've changed your mind about marriage and a family, and I don't think you have."
He stared at her, as if he didn't believe her.
"You don't mean that."
"I do mean it."
"I've heard that before, Lindsay, and it's foolishness. We belong together. We always have. You know it, and I do, too. We're good together."
"That's true, Monty, but I want more. I want a husband and children. Is that so difficult to understand?"
His mouth thinned.
"For the love of God, does it always have to go back to what you want?"
"In this case, yes. It's my life."
He pounded his fist against the counter, then seemed to regret the outburst.
"Lindsay, would you listen to reason? I can't marry you. I just can't do it. Marriage ruins everything. I know that from experience.
You don't. Please."
He advanced toward her, then stopped.
"Fine, if that's the way you want it."
"I'm afraid it is."
"You'll be back. Until then, all I can do is wait."
Monty slammed the door on his way out of her apartment. Afterward, Lindsay sat, mulling over their conversation, her arms wrapped around her knees. A chill spread down her arms that had nothing to do with the air-conditioned room. His bitter words about marriage echoed in her ears. So did his claim that she'd change her mind, that she'd come back. He seemed to think she'd eventually be willing to accept him on his terms, willing to give up her own dreams. Lindsay bit into her lower lip and hugged her legs all the harder. Monty's divorce had destroyed any possibility of his taking a second chance on commitment. Nothing she could say or do would be enough to reassure him. For 2 years, Lindsay had believed that Monty would see the light and realize that she wasn't his ex-wife. Because she was stubborn and because she loved him, she'd refused to accept defeat. His marriage, brief as it was, had forever marked him. Monty was incapable of giving her anything more than he already had. Lindsay had made her decision. One thing was certain. She had to stay away from him. Her love for him made her too vulnerable. He would fight to preserve their relationship, and he'd work at wearing her down the same way he had before. Leaning back, she closed her eyes and reviewed her options. A new career, returning to college, starting her own business. Unexpectedly, she remembered her visit to Buffalo Valley and her conversation with Hassie Knight. She smiled. Hassie hadn't come right out and said it, but without a teacher, Buffalo Valley was doomed. That was the answer Lindsay sought. She would take the job. Obviously, the town needed her, and perhaps she needed it. She had an opportunity to make a difference. A year. She'd give Buffalo Valley a year of her life. In a 12-month period, they could locate and hire a permanent replacement for the high school position. She'd fill in, and those 12 months would give her the distance she needed from Monty. And, she thought with growing excitement, she could move into her grandparents' home. It was pretty dilapidated. No wonder it hadn't sold. She recalled the peeling paint, the broken porch steps, and falling down fence. But she could get it fixed up, and she'd have a free place to live if she took the job. The house would be a connection to her past, while teaching school could be her future. She'd do it. Decision made, she dug through her purse for Hassie's phone number. Funny, she mused as she reached for the telephone. She'd somehow known when she left Buffalo Valley that she was destined to return. She just hadn't realized it would be this soon. The word that a high school teacher had been found traveled faster than a dust storm through Buffalo Valley. Gage heard about it from Lita late one afternoon, 2 weeks after Lindsay's visit.
"You remember meeting her, don't you?"
his mother said, excitedly. Gage remembered all right, and he knew without his mother's telling him that it was Lindsay who was coming back. For 2 weeks now, the woman had been on his mind, crowding into his thoughts when she was least welcome. In the time since her visit, he thought of her far too much, and he didn't like it. He distrusted the feeling that had come after their brief introduction. It was too close to hope. She won't last. He said it because he needed to hear it, needed to remind himself that he shouldn't put any stock in her coming, that he couldn't afford to feel anything, not for a city woman who'd be leaving after a year. Kevin stormed into the kitchen, the screen door slamming in his wake.
Callis said we got a teacher. Is it true?
His excitement rang through the room. Hassie phoned with the news, Lita said.
Didn't I tell you we'd find a teacher? Didn't I?
Kevin nodded as if he, too, had shared their mother's faith from the first. He turned to Gage.
A bunch of us kids are going over to clean up the school. We're gonna need help.
The implication was clear. Kevin wanted Gage to volunteer his services.
Everyone's doing something, Lita put in.
Gage ignored the dig.
Where's the new teacher going to live?
He avoided saying her name because he found he liked the sound of it too much.
Hassie told her a house came with a teaching contract, but Miss Snyder says she wants to live in her grandparents' old place,
Lita answered, frowning a little.
The house is going to need work, but I suppose she already knows that, since she looked it over while she was here. Still, she probably doesn't realize how much work.
His brother and mother were watching Gage as if preparing the house and the school were entirely up to him.
What are you looking at me for? He demanded crossly.
Kevin's gaze widened, as if to suggest it should be obvious.
Someone's got to get the place ready for her to move in.
Gage rolled his eyes.
Oh, Gage, why can't you be happy? His mother chided. We have a teacher, and she's going to bring a breath of fresh air to this community.
Lindsay was delighted that her parents had decided to accompany her to Buffalo Valley. Her dad drove his truck, pulling the U-Haul trailer, while Lindsay followed behind in her own car, Mutt and Jeff, her dogs, traveling with her. Leaving Savannah hadn't been easy for a lot of reasons, but particularly because of Monty. It had taken several confrontations before he'd accept that he wasn't going to be able to cajole her into staying. As she prepared for her departure, he'd become angry, insisting she'd be back. He was right, of course, but when she did return, he would be completely and totally out of her life. Maddie had cheered her decision and even helped her pack. Lindsay knew she could count on her friend's support and encouragement during the next year. They'd parted with promises to keep in touch. Traveling with two dogs and all her worldly possessions made for a much slower trip this time around. 6 days after they left Savannah, the Snyders pulled into Buffalo Valley and parked in front of Knight's Pharmacy. Her father climbed down from the truck and looked around as if seeing the town for the first time. Hands on his hips, he stood there for a long moment. When their eyes met, Lindsay saw his doubts and worries, and she tried to reassure him with a smile. She knew what she was doing. He needn't worry about her. Lindsay attached the leashes to Mutt and Jeff before she opened the car door. She, too, studied the town that was to be her home for the next year. It did look bleak and sad. Ever the optimist, she'd convinced herself it wasn't as shabby as she remembered. But it was. Worse, even. Still, she didn't let that dissuade her.
Lindsay, look! Her mother said, pointing to a banner strung between Hanson's Grocery and Knight's Pharmacy.
Someone had taken an old white sheet and painted, "Welcome, Miss Snyder," in bright red paint across it. This simple greeting completely changed the grim reality of Buffalo Valley.
Lindsay!
Hassie stepped out of the pharmacy and threw open her arms.
Welcome back!
After hugging the older woman, Lindsay introduced her parents.
You remember my dad, don't you? This is Brian, and my mother, Kathleen. Brian, of course! Oh, my, you do look good! Come in, come in. The whole town's been waiting for you. You made good time.
Chattering happily, Hassie ushered them inside. Lindsay and her parents had just sat down at the soda fountain when others started to arrive. Jacob Hansen was the first. He came in from the grocery store across the street.
We got your cupboard stocked with a few of the necessities, he told Lindsay.
My cupboards?
At the house.
That's our way of thanking you.
Oh, thank you. Lindsay hadn't expected anyone to do that.
It wasn't only me and Marta, Jacob was quick to tell her. We had a pounding last Monday night. Practically everyone in town contributed something.
Lindsay had never heard of such a thing, and turned to her mother, who explained. Everyone brings a pound of something to stock the kitchen.
How thoughtful.
The high school kids repainted the inside of the house, Hassie told her. Did a good job, too.
Joshua McKenna contributed the paint,
the grocer leaned forward to say.
You remember Joshua, don't you? He's the president of the town council.
But the kids picked out the color. A tall, rather attractive brunette approached her and held out her hand. I'm Sarah Stern, Joshua's daughter, and my Calla's going to be one of your students.
More and more people filled the pharmacy.
You need help unloading that trailer?
Lindsay's gaze fell on a man wearing a uniform shirt advertising a brand name gasoline. He stepped forward and offered his hand.
Dennis Erlicker, he said. From this welcome, you can guess we're pleased to see you.
Lindsay laughed at his comment. Is one of your children going to be in my class, too? He shook his head.
I'm not married.
Lindsay saw the way he looked at Sarah, and guessed the two of them were probably an item. Romance, however, was the last thing on her mind. She'd come to recover from one unhappy episode, and wasn't planning to complicate her life with another.
We're serious about helping you unpack the trailer,
Joshua McKenna said, glancing around at his friends and neighbors.
Might as well say yes, seeing you've got this many volunteers.
Lindsay would have preferred to relax for a few minutes before tackling that project, but her father answered for her.
We'd appreciate as much help as we can get, he told them.
Her grandparents' house was two blocks off Main, and Lindsay walked over, leading her dogs and half the town. Her father drove the truck and U-Haul, while her mother brought Lindsay's car.
This is the closest thing we've had to a parade in years, Hassie joked, planting herself beside Lindsay.
Rounding the corner, Lindsay saw her grandparents' house. She gasped, hardly able to believe her eyes. The yard had been cleaned, and the flower boxes planted. A row of bright red geraniums brought a flash of color to the white house. The windows sparkled, and a wicker rocker had been placed on the front porch, with a large welcome mat in front of the door.
It was one of your grandmother's favorite spots, Hassie whispered, sounding almost emotional.
This is too much, she protested.
We wanted you to know we appreciate what you're doing,
Joshua McKenna said as he passed her, carrying the first load from the trailer.
The fence has been repaired, too, Lindsay said in wonder. And it's painted and everything. We didn't want your dogs to get lost, Hassie said. You can thank Gage Sinclair for that.
Gage was someone Lindsay hadn't forgotten. They'd met during those few moments when he'd come into the pharmacy with his mother. Lindsay didn't think she'd ever seen such depth and character in a man's face. He was in his 30s, she'd guessed. But the years couldn't have been easy ones. The tracery of fine lines at the corners of his eyes told her that. It was his eyes, though, that had struck her most. They were the most incredible blue, verging on gray. Before they'd had a chance to exchange more than a word or two, he'd made his excuses and left. In those few moments, Lindsay had keenly felt his appraisal. But whatever he thought, he'd kept to himself.
If you like what we did to the outside, just wait till you see the interior.
Her face bright with joy, Hassie grabbed Lindsay's hand and led her into the house. Inside, Lindsay paused. The place was virtually unrecognizable. The living room was a bright white, and when she moved into the kitchen, she found it to be a cheery shade of lemon yellow. Her bathroom was a robin's egg blue, and her bedroom a pale lavender. What hadn't been repainted had been scrubbed until it glistened. The floors shone with wax, and the entire place smelled fresh and clean. With so many people helping, it didn't take more than 30 minutes to completely unload the trailer and the truck, and by the end of an hour, her clothes were hung in the closet and her kitchen cupboards were stocked. This old house, which had felt so stark and empty only a few weeks earlier, had been scrubbed clean, repainted, and repaired, until now it looked and felt like home. Gage had been cutting wheat all morning under a darkening sky. With the threat of rain in the air and the wind picking up speed, he he decided to get the combine out of the fields before it got stuck in the mud. Not until he pulled into the yard did he notice Lindsay's car. He was instantly angry, but he understood his reaction. He didn't want to see her, had taken pains to avoid contact with her since she arrived in town a few weeks ago. He wasn't a man who ran away from many things, and he barely knew this woman, but she dominated his thoughts to an unprecedented and disturbing degree. He'd wondered what it would feel like to kiss her, to hold her, to have her as part of his life. At night, when he stumbled into bed, exhausted, he couldn't close his eyes without her image filling his mind. It made him damn mad, because he knew he was setting himself up for trouble. Most everyone agreed she wouldn't last long. As bad luck would have it, Lindsay and his mother stepped out of the house at the precise moment he'd decided to head for the barn. Gage! His mother raised her hand and called to him. Briefly, he considered pretending he hadn't heard her, but knew it would do no good, especially when one of the dogs came running after him, barking like crazy. He removed his hat and drew his forearm across his brow, cursing under his breath. With the border collie leaping beside him, he walked slowly toward the women. "You remember Lindsay, don't you?" his mother asked as he approached.
"Yeah."
He nodded once, aware that he could have been more polite. "Lindsay's visiting every family that has a high school student," his mother explained. "I'm new to teaching," she said, apparently for his benefit, "and I'm going to need help from the community. Lita and Hassie have been wonderful already." She smiled fondly at his mother.
"What kind of help are you looking for?"
Gage asked, his voice gruff and unfriendly. She ignored his lack of welcome.
"I was hoping you could tell me something about yourself. Something you could share with my students."
"I was telling her about your bees, Gage," his mother said.
"I've been meaning to thank you for the jar of honey," Lindsay added. "It's delicious."
"It didn't come from me. My mother's the one who sent it."
"Gage!" Lita chastised.
The phone rang inside the house, and she glanced over her shoulder.
"I'd better answer that."
She took a couple of steps toward the door, then hesitated, looking from Lindsay to Gage almost as if she were afraid to leave the two of them alone.
"You go on. I'll walk Miss Snyder to her car," Gage told her.
His mother hurried to the house, leaving the two of them standing in the yard with the wind whirling dust devils about them.
"Would you be willing to talk to the class about your beehives?" Lindsay asked.
He was framing his refusal, but she didn't give him the opportunity.
"Joshua McKenna said he'd come and talk about the history of North Dakota. He's apparently quite knowledgeable in that area. I'm hoping to convince Jeb McKenna to talk about buffalo. I mean bison.
"Jeb said he would?"
That surprised Gage. His neighbor to the south had lost a leg a few years back and become something of a recluse. He'd quit farming and taken up raising bison, surprising everyone with his success. But since the accident, he rarely ventured into town. Gage knew Joshua worried about his son, and Sarah had bent over backward to help her brother, but to no avail.
"Well, if Jeb agrees, then so will I," Gage said grimly.
Lindsay frowned at his tone, clearly puzzled.
"Have I done something to offend you?"
So, she liked the direct approach. Fine, so did he.
"As a matter of fact, you have. You came back."
She scowled fiercely at him.
"Do you mean to tell me you'd rather the high school just closed?"
"No, it's nothing personal, Miss Snyder. But I don't want you here."
Anger flared in her eyes.
"Why should you care one way or the other? You don't know me."
"I don't want to know you."
She blinked, as if he'd so utterly baffled her, she no longer knew what to say. The storm broke just then, and she turned around and ran straight for her car. Thunder crashed overhead, and the rain fell in fat, thick drops that beat it on the dry, dusty soil. Her car door slammed. She was dry and safe. But Gage stood in the downpour and watched as she drove out of his yard. By the time he dashed into the house, he was drenched to the skin. He hadn't even removed his hat before his mother laid into him.
"I want to know what you said to Lindsay."
"I didn't say anything."
"Yes, you did. I saw the way Lindsay raced to her car. You insulted her, didn't you?"
"If she took exception to..."
"I won't have it. You were rude to her, and I won't have it. Do you hear me?"
Gage had hardly ever seen his mother this angry. Her face was red, her eyes blazing, and she held herself ramrod straight.
Mom, you'll apologize.
The hell I will.
Gage wasn't going to let his mother dictate his actions. She glared at him silently, then pointedly stalked out of the room. Gage turned to leave himself, then froze as his mother marched back into the kitchen with a bouquet of purple prairie wildflowers she'd cut that morning.
Go after her. Take these with you.
Gage saw the determination in his mother's eyes and knew he was fighting a losing battle.
Damn it all to hell!
Furious, Gage stomped out of the house, pausing only long enough to grab the truck keys from the peg by the door. His mother hurried after him, slogging through the mud.
Take the flowers with you!
He didn't look back as he marched across the yard.
The hell with the flowers!
His anger sustained him all the way into town. Even when he'd parked outside the teacher's house, he had to draw several deep breaths in an effort to cool his temper. What annoyed him the most was knowing that his mother was right. He owed Lindsay an apology, and given the opportunity, he would have offered her one. He resented being pressured into it. Climbing out of the truck, he walked up her porch steps and leaned on the doorbell. He'd say his piece, then leave. The door opened, and Lindsay stood on the other side wearing shorts and work boots with her ash-blonde hair tied up in a kerchief. She seemed shocked to see him.
Gage?
He stiffened. I'm here to apologize. Her face relaxed, and she opened the screen door for him.
Come in.
He stepped inside and looked the house over. He was impressed. What had, a few weeks earlier, been a decrepit old house, was now a home. Her curtains and furniture, a dark green rug, some lamps, photographs, and prints on the clean white walls, it all made an incredible difference.
As I explained, I came to apologize.
The words didn't come easy. Nor did he mention that it had been at his mother's insistence.
I was rude to you earlier.
Yes, you were. Why? What have I ever done to you?
He didn't know how to answer. He couldn't find a way to tell her that every time he saw her or thought about her, he got angry. So, instead, he told her what he suspected.
You aren't going to last. All you're doing is raising everyone's hopes. Once reality hits, you'll move on. You'll abandon the community.
I signed a contract for 1 year, and I intend to honor that.
Like hell you will.
He was angry again, so angry he couldn't keep from raising his voice.
You won't make it past the first snowfall.
Like hell I won't!
She was yelling now, too.
I'm a woman of my word.
Why'd you come in the first place? What's Buffalo Valley got that you can't find in Savannah?
None of your business.
She stood only a few inches away from him, her eyes spitting fire, her lips moist and shining. The top two buttons of her sleeveless blouse were unfastened, leading his gaze to the promise of her breasts. Her legs were long and slender, and then he knew. It was obvious.
You're running away, aren't you?
She'd accepted the piddling teacher's salary the town had offered because she wanted out of an unhappy situation. She was escaping a love affair gone bad. At the thought of her in the arms of another man, his gut tightened with a wave of jealousy.
What's the matter?
He taunted.
Did you find out he's married?
I think you should leave.
She clomped over to the door in her heavy boots and held it open. He hesitated at the door, where she stood with her arms crossed and her eyes narrowed. With a nonchalant shrug, Gage did as she requested, recognizing that, once again, he'd screwed up.
God help him if his mother heard about this.
Lindsay was furious. So furious she could barely stand still. When she'd arrived in Buffalo Valley, it had all seemed so wonderful. The house had been readied for her, the cupboards filled, and the welcome mat placed on her front porch. In the weeks since, she'd confronted reality. The one-room school was wholly inadequate. The only computer available was the laptop she'd brought with her. The school district could barely afford textbooks, let alone computers. Lindsay wanted to do a good job, give her students a basic education, and supply them with everything they needed to face the world after graduation. To do that, she was going to need help. Lots of it. The first time she'd met Gage that Saturday at Hassie's, she'd liked him. When she thought about returning to Buffalo Valley, he was someone who'd come to mind, someone she'd instinctively assumed would be a friend. Instead, he'd just been rude and arrogant, insisting she wouldn't last.
His attitude, she'd discovered, was unfortunately typical. While everyone was friendly and welcoming, the town seemed divided on the issue of how long she'd stay. Some seemed to feel she'd serve out her contract, others that she'd leave halfway through. Nobody thought she'd stay a day longer than 1 year. Although she had roots in Buffalo Valley, she wasn't considered one of them. The prevailing attitude didn't upset her, and in truth, she'd been expecting it. She knew she had to prove herself, and that was something she was prepared to do, something she felt she could do. But after today's confrontations with Gage, Lindsay wasn't sure anymore. His hostility had come as a shock. It discouraged her and made her question her own ability to succeed at this. She sighed heavily and glanced around, not knowing what to do with herself. The doorbell chimed, and barking crazily, Mutt and Jeff raced to the front door. A surreptitious look through the window revealed Gage Sinclair. Again? She hadn't recovered from his last verbal bout.
"Go away!" she shouted. "Whatever you have to say doesn't interest me."
"The least you can do is hear me out."
"If you've come to apologize again, save it. I'm still bleeding from the last one."
Gage pounded on the door again. "All I want is to talk to you."
Exasperated, Lindsay threw open the door and folded her arms, leaving the screen door between them.
"All right, say what you have to say and then kindly go."
Now that they stood face to face, Gage couldn't seem to get the words out.
"Well, I was thinking, maybe you..."
He paused, squared his shoulders, and continued.
"Would you like to have a beer with me?"
"You came back to ask me out for a beer?"
He hesitated.
"Well, yes."
If she hadn't been so astounded, she would have laughed. He'd been rude and insulting, then showed up on her porch and practically broke down her door because he was looking for a drinking companion?
"Thank you, but no."
"That's what I thought you'd say."
He turned to leave.
"Gage, wait."
She'd rather have him as her friend than her enemy. Opening the screen door, she stepped onto the porch and touched his arm.
"It was sweet of you to ask."
His reaction to her touch was immediate, and he shocked her by taking hold of her shoulders. He stared down at her with his incredible blue-gray eyes, immobilizing her. She recognized what was about to happen. She became aware that he was going to kiss her at the same moment she decided it was what she wanted. He pulled her into his arms with none of the finesse to which she was accustomed. When he kissed her, it felt wild and dangerous, intense. He kissed her with an urgency that had her clinging to him with both hands. Lindsay had done her share of kissing, but had never experienced anything like this. Gage kissed her as if he'd been waiting to kiss her his whole life. When he released her, Lindsay stumbled backward. She caught herself on the porch railing, clutching it with one hand while heaving in deep breaths. Shocked by what he'd done, what she'd allowed, no, wanted, she placed the back of her hand against her throbbing lips and stared at him.
"When you change your mind about having that beer," he said, "let me know."
Then he turned and walked over to his truck, parked in front of her house. Lindsay knew she was in over her head the minute her 12 students filed into the one-room schoolhouse. The first to walk in was Calla Stern. If Lindsay hadn't known better, she would have thought she'd taken over an inner-city class. Calla wore black army boots and black everything else. She had her nose pierced and her hair spiked. Everything about her spoke of attitude, most of it bad. Gage's brother, Kevin, followed Calla with his arm tightly wrapped around a girl who was even blonder than he was and a head shorter. They selected their desks across from each other and shoved them close together. Two boys roared in behind the lovebirds, arguing heatedly as they elbowed each other at the door. These were the infamous Loomis twins, Larry and Bert. Lindsay had met them soon after her arrival and heard horror stories about them from almost everyone in Buffalo Valley. Since Larry and Bert couldn't agree on anything, Lindsay foolishly suggested they sit at opposite sides of the room. The boys vehemently disagreed. They'd sat next to each other their entire school lives and weren't about to let an upstart city teacher separate them now. Her day had gone downhill after that. By 3:30, when school was dismissed, Lindsay was so tired she barely had the energy to walk home. Her first inclination was just to fall into bed and cuddle up with her dogs at her feet and sleep until morning. She'd had no idea teaching would be this physically and mentally exhausting. Instead of barricading herself inside her house, she decided to visit Hassie at the pharmacy. Lindsay was badly in need of some inspiration. Gage Sinclair had predicted she wouldn't last beyond the first snowstorm. The way she felt just then, she wouldn't last till the end of the week.
"Looks like you could use one of my extra-thick, extra-rich chocolate sodas," Hassie said immediately.
"What I need is a hot toddy and a bottle of aspirin."
Lindsay climbed onto a stool and slouched forward.
"That rough, was it? Worse. I don't know what I was thinking. Hassie, I feel as though I'm drowning, and it's either sink or swim." "You'll do just fine. If you want, I'll stop by tomorrow and give those little hellions a chemistry lesson they won't soon forget."
"I've got you scheduled for next week. Joshua McKenna agreed to speak this Friday."
"Anyone else volunteered?"
"Gage, well, sort of."
Hassie set a fizzing soda in front of her.
"Speaking of Gage, it seems the two of you are getting along famously. I saw his truck parked outside your place, not once, but twice."
"He came to apologize." Hassie chuckled.
"That boy has more style than I give him credit for."
"You saw?"
Heat rushed to her cheeks. Lindsay had no reason to be embarrassed, but Hassie was the only person in town who knew about Monty.
"My goodness, Gage had you practically bent in half. I had no idea the boy could kiss like that."
Lindsay would rather not discuss the incident, but now that Hassie had brought up the subject, she couldn't ignore it.
"I know what you saw, Hassie, but it wasn't the way it looked." "You don't have to explain a thing to me. Gage is a fine man. You're both young, and if you were to become romantically involved..."
"We're not romantically involved."
"Gage Sinclair is a good man."
"I'm sure he is, but I'm not interested."
Doing a poor job of disguising a smile, Hassie grabbed a rag and wiped down the counter.
"Don't be so quick to make a decision. I don't know what would have happened to Lita and Kevin if Gage hadn't taken over the farm after John died. Nice man, John Betts, but not much with finances. He was up to his neck in debt when he passed on. So instead of buying and working his own land, Gage took over the farm, and he's the sole support of his mother and half-brother."
Despite what she'd said, Lindsay was curious about Gage. "He was born here?" Hassie nodded.
"Lita was a widow for almost 10 years before she met and married John. Gage was about 13 or 14 at the time. He went into the army as soon as he graduated from high school. He stayed in the army for several years, then he went away to school for a while. When he returned, he started working the farm with John. He was looking for acreage of his own when John died."
"He's never been..."
Lindsay stopped, unsure she should be asking these questions.
"Married? No. But Gage Sinclair would make you one hell of a husband."
"Hassie, the kiss was nothing. He came to apologize."
"Uh-huh," Hassie said,
clearly not believing her.
"Whatever you say."
After one last sip of the rich chocolate soda, Lindsay headed home, feeling much better. It had only been her first day of teaching. Things were bound to get better. This was a period of adjustment for them all, she told herself, teacher as well as students. The phone rang just as she opened her door. Lindsay stared at it, almost afraid to answer in case it was a parent who disapproved of the way she'd handled her class. If so, Lindsay wasn't sure she'd disagree.
"Hello,"
she said, trying to sound professional and confident.
"It's Gage."
He was the last person she'd expected to hear from.
"Hassie saw you kissing me,"
she blurted out, surprising herself. His soft laughter annoyed her.
"If it doesn't bother you, it doesn't bother me."
"As a matter of fact, it does bother me."
"You liked it that much?"
Lindsay fumed silently. After the day she'd had, she was in no mood to deal with the likes of Gage Sinclair.
"I suppose there's a reason you phoned me?"
"Two reasons, actually."
Lindsay could hear the smug cheerfulness in his voice, and it irritated her all the more.
"I'll come and talk to the high school class about honeybees if you want."
Gratitude cooled her irritation, slightly.
"That would be wonderful. I'll put you down for the first Friday in October. And the second reason for your call?"
I was wondering if you'd like to have a beer with me Saturday night at Buffalo Bob's.
Lindsay hesitated, weighing the decision. She was tempted to say yes. The man's kisses could buckle her knees. But she'd just met him, and they were already the subject of local gossip.
I don't think that would be a good idea.
His own pause was lengthy.
What I said about you getting over someone back in Savannah, that's right, isn't it?
She hesitated again, then admitted the truth.
Yes, I'm giving myself a year to heal. It isn't you, Gage, it's me. I don't want to leap from one relationship into another.
I asked you out for a beer. It wasn't a marriage proposal.
I know, but I thought, you know.
As a matter of fact, I do. I can't even get you to have a beer with me. Oh, I'm worthy enough to work three nights in a row getting your fence repaired. I'm worthy enough to talk to your class for an hour on a Friday afternoon.
Gage, it isn't like that.
The hell it isn't.
You're the most irrational man I've ever known.
Me? I don't know where I stand with you half the time. You practically threw yourself at me.
Threw myself at you?
The man was living in a dream world.
What else am I to think when you kissed me like that?
Now she was fuming.
You're the one who kissed me,
she reminded him, so angry she could barely speak.
And you loved it.
You're jealous.
The hell I am. What I am, in case you haven't noticed, is mad.
You don't have a right to feel anything when it comes to me.
Be that as it may, I can't help feeling something for you.
She stared at the phone, open-mouthed, with no idea how to respond to his confession.
I thought you were someone special. Now I can see how wrong I was. Listen, I won't make the mistake of asking you out again. It's better like this for both of us. I'll stay out of your way and you can stay out of mine. Agreed?
His words shouldn't have hurt her, but they did.
What is it with everyone? She cried. Why does everyone treat me like this? I came to this town hoping to make a difference. But so far, my only real friend is Hassie. Am I really such an outsider? It's like you're all holding your breath, waiting for me to pack my bags and leave. Even the kids. It drives me crazy. I'm here, day after day, and... Oh, never mind. You don't want to hear it. You're like everyone else. Fine. You don't want to be my friend because of some terrible wrong I'm supposed to have committed against you. You know what? I don't need friends like you. And with that, she slammed down the receiver.
End of side two.
School had been in session about a month, and Lindsay was beginning to feel her way as a teacher. Each day was better. It wasn't easy instructing all 4 years of high school at one time. But she'd made contacts with other teachers in the area, and she had help from the community. She did feel disappointed that she hadn't made more friends by now. Hassie was her confidant and mentor, but she'd barely exchanged more than a few words with Sarah Stern or Rachel Fisher, the other two women her age. She wasn't sure about Sarah, but Rachel seemed friendly enough, just preoccupied with her new pizza business. Lindsay suspected that given time, things would take care of themselves. She was still new, untried, and Hassie told her that most newcomers encountered a similar reception when they arrived in Buffalo Valley. More important, she'd struck a truce with her students. Once the ground rules had been established, she discovered they were eager to learn. She was new, young, and the kids considered her cool. They were all impressed by what they saw as her urban sophistication. Lindsay cashed in on their goodwill and reintroduced programs that had long been abandoned from lack of funds, often using her own savings, meager as they were. She brought in her camera when she learned they didn't have a yearbook and soon had a staff willing to put one together. Jessica and Calla volunteered to write a town newspaper. Soon, the entire class was involved. One afternoon, quite by accident, she found Kevin Betz's sketching tablet and discovered that Gage's brother was an undeniably talented artist. He was shy about letting others see his work. After some cajoling, he'd volunteered, along with Joe and Mark Lammerman, to paint a mural on one wall of the classroom. The guest speakers from the community added a whole new dimension to their Friday afternoons. She had a number of volunteers already and was drumming up more. She was just beginning to feel good about the way classroom life was developing when she experienced a new sort of crisis. It was a Thursday morning, the last week of September. Kevin walked silently into the classroom with an equally taciturn Jessica. Both slipped into their seats, looking sullen and uncommunicative. At first, Lindsay thought they'd had a lover's spat, but then the normally boisterous Loomis twins arrived, their demeanor just as serious. Calla frowned and slumped onto her desk, holding it with both arms as if she defied anyone to pry her loose.
"Hey, what's going on?" Lindsay asked, wondering at the strange mood. "Everyone's acting like it's the end of the world."
"You don't know?" Kevin asked, looking surprised. She shook her head.
"You didn't listen to the farm report this morning?" Calla challenged, as if it were understood that everyone did.
Lindsay shrugged. "I heard it was a bumper year for corn." "A bumper corn crop is right. Problem is, no one's willing to pay a man a decent wage for his efforts." This came from Stan Muller, a freshman who was obviously parroting his father's comment.
"My mom was crying when I left for school," Jessica said. "She didn't want us kids to know, but it wasn't like she could hide it. It means another year of doing without, and we need so much."
She sounded close to tears herself.
"My dad said I can forget about college when I graduate."
"It was bad enough that the wheat prices were lower than expected, but corn, too? It just isn't fair."
"Gage was pretty upset," Kevin volunteered. "Mom told him the Lord would provide, and Gage said he didn't think the Lord was listening. We're going to need all the help we can get if we're going to make it through the year."
One by one, her students relayed the effects the devastating news was having on their families. Even the kids who lived in town took the news hard, and so did those ranching. Lindsay supposed that was what community meant. You cared what happened to your neighbors. She ran into Gage in town that afternoon. She had not yet seen him since the kissing episode on her front porch, and when she caught sight of him outside Buffalo Bob's, she was annoyed at the way her heart quickened in anticipation.
"Gage!"
she called, raising her hand to get his attention. He hesitated, but waited while she crossed the street. He wasn't smiling. His eyes, which she thought of as beautiful, seemed cold and lifeless just then, as if he'd like nothing better than to escape. Lindsay didn't know what to say or how to say it, but she couldn't let the moment pass without some word of encouragement.
"The kids told me about the corn and grain prices. I'm so sorry, Gage."
She placed her hand on his forearm, and he stared at it for a moment.
"So am I," he said.
And with that, he headed into Buffalo Bob's, as though standing on the sidewalk making polite conversation was beyond him. Lindsay felt the barely restrained anger in him, as if his frustration had reached a breaking point. She fought the urge to follow, to sit and talk with him. If nothing else, she could listen, but he wasn't looking for someone to share his worries, and he'd made it plain that he didn't welcome her company. Lindsay experienced a feeling of unaccountable loss. He would have made a good friend. The next person Lindsay talked to was Rachel Fisher, inside Hanson's Grocery. She dropped in to pick up a few necessities for the week.
"You heard?" Rachel asked when they saw each other at the produce counter.
Lindsay nodded.
"I didn't realize how important..." "It was naive of me, I suppose." "You can't know until you've lived it."
"Are you worried?" Lindsay asked. Rachel had wagered her future on her fledgling pizza business, and it would be a shame if it went under without having had a chance to get off the ground.
"Damn straight I'm worried," Rachel confessed. "Pizza's a luxury item, and farmers around here were counting on grain prices being good this year. It's a blow to everyone."
"Is there anything anyone can do?"
"That hasn't already been tried, you mean?"
"But the government!" Rachel shook her head.
"Farmers feel like the government slid them down the river. It's tragic. America's small farmers are being destroyed. A lot of people won't make it through the winter now."
Lindsay realized she still had a great deal to learn.
"What's going to happen?"
Rachel looked away, as though even speaking the words brought her pain.
"The bank won't have any option but to foreclose on mortgages and debts. Some people will be lucky enough to sell their land, and others will simply walk away with nothing to show for their blood, sweat, and tears. Nothing but crippling debt."
Some of the farming families in this area have held on to the land for 3 and 4 generations, only to lose it all now. It breaks my heart. Imagine, to survive the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl years, and everything else, and have to sell out now. It does something to a man's pride when he can't support his family. He feels cheated and angry. People here have always had a strong work ethic. Lindsay nodded. She'd certainly noticed that. I wish there was something I could do. For years, she'd heard about the plight of America's farmers, but she'd never fully understood their problems. We're going to lose more people this year, and the town's already half the size it was while I was growing up. Marta Hansen saw them talking and walked over to join them. This is the final straw, she announced. I told Jacob this morning we should sell out while we can. Mrs. Hansen, Rachel said gently, things will get better. Marta shook her head. People have been saying that for years, and it only gets worse. You're not leaving Buffalo Valley, are you? Lindsay asked. Jacob doesn't like to listen to my talk about leaving, but this morning, when he heard the corn prices, after what happened with the wheat, he just shook his head. He agrees we can't stay any longer. You're not going to close the store, are you? Alarm made Lindsay's voice unnaturally high. It's for sale, Marta said. We're getting out while we can. Saturday night, Gage sat alone in Buffalo Bob's, nursing a beer. He hadn't driven into town looking for company, but he'd expected the bar to have a little more activity than this.
Where is everyone?
He asked, when Bob delivered his second draft.
Not in here, Bob muttered.
It went without saying that the farmers would be tight-fisted after the devastating news earlier in the week. Generally, Gage was careful with a dollar himself, but he couldn't stand being in the house with his mother and brother, pretending everything was okay when it wasn't. Neither of them seemed to appreciate the gravity of the situation. Then again, perhaps they did, and it worried them too much to dwell on what the future held. Either way, Gage needed an escape, so he'd driven into town. And naturally, there was Lindsay Snyder. Without being obvious about it, he'd hoped they might run into each other again, as they had on Thursday afternoon. She couldn't have any idea how that brief meeting had helped him. The concerned look in her eyes had touched him, and when she gently placed her hand on his arm, it had demanded every shred of restraint not to haul her into his embrace. He'd wanted to shut out the world, use her warmth and caring as a shield. In that moment, he'd needed Lindsay. Unfortunately, she'd already made it plain she wasn't interested, which was fine by him. Well, not fine, but acceptable. He wasn't going to press any unwanted advances on her. Gage wished to hell he'd never kissed her. Those kisses had been a mistake. The feel of her, the taste of her, had imprinted themselves on his subconscious. At the most inopportune moments, he found himself submerged by swells of desire, wishing he could block her from his overactive mind. It had been like this from the minute they'd met. Thoughts of her tormented him, especially at night. Buffalo Bob sighed, interrupting Gage's thoughts.
I won't be able to stay open much longer if this keeps up.
Gage nodded.
I heard the Hansons put the grocery up for sale.
I know. If it had been up to Marta, they would have left years ago. You staying?
The question took Gage by surprise.
Of course I am.
Buffalo Bob grinned crookedly.
That's what I figured. You're like me, too damn stubborn to know when you're beat.
Until that moment, Gage hadn't thought of himself in those terms. But perhaps his friend was right. He was too stubborn to let anything beat him down. Usually. But with Lindsay, he knew he was beat. Lindsay phoned, Lita announced when Gage walked into the house later that night. She wants to remind you about Friday, about talking to the high school students. Gage didn't know why he'd ever agreed to talk to the high school students. Well, yes, he did know. It had been the only way he could think of to see Lindsay again without being overt about his feelings. Are you going to call her back? His mother asked, humming softly to herself. Gage knew she loved all this. His mother and Hassie would like nothing better than to do some matchmaking between him and Lindsay. Gage was willing, although pride demanded that he not let it show. The problem was with Lindsay.
I don't think there's any reason to return the call, he said.
His mother stopped and smiled at him. "Lindsay's a beautiful woman," she said dreamily.
"What's that got to do with anything?"
he muttered. It wasn't as if he hadn't noticed.
"Well," Lita said, "I thought you'd welcome an excuse to talk to her."
"I don't."
It was best to maintain this air of disinterest. Otherwise, his mother would go at the matchmaking full tilt. She'd be pressuring him to ask Lindsay out. He didn't want to tell her he already had, and that Lindsay's answer was no.
"You like her, don't you?"
His mother sounded worried. Maybe he was overdoing the disinterested part.
"She's all right."
"Hassie and I think she's wonderful with the kids. Did you know the high schoolers are publishing the first Buffalo Valley newspaper in 10 years? The kids produced the entire newspaper themselves. Kevin wrote the piece about the Hanson grocery being up for sale, and he drew the political cartoon. And Kevin told me this morning that Lindsay started a drama club. She approached Joshua McKenna about cleaning out the old movie theater and using it for a Christmas play. She thought it might cheer the town up, what with corn and grain prices making this a difficult time for everyone. I thought it was an excellent idea. Lindsay Snyder is just what this town needed," his mother said firmly.
Gage agreed reluctantly.
"Oh, sure. She's a welcome addition to Buffalo Valley."
"She's exactly what you need, too. You're 35, and it's long past time you were married. I was hoping..."
Gage held up his hand.
"Mother, I love you, but this isn't a subject I'm willing to discuss with you, especially not right now."
Her shoulders lifted, as if she were about to say something else. Then she stopped herself.
"All right, if that's the way you want it."
But something about the way she was looking at him told Gage that his mother wasn't going to give up that easily.
"You're coming back, aren't you?"
Kella Stern followed Lindsay out to her living room, hauling Lindsay's carry-on bag. She'd come for detailed dog-watching instructions. It was a Wednesday afternoon in late November, and Lindsay was catching the red-eye out of Grand Forks, and then a connecting flight in Minneapolis, arriving in Savannah early Thanksgiving morning. Kevin and Lita Betts had volunteered to drive her into Grand Forks, a 90-minute ride. Lita said she had some last-minute shopping for Thanksgiving dinner, and Kevin, bless his heart, had volunteered to drive.
"I'll be back," Lindsay promised, as she set the large bag down next to the front door, as if she'd abandon her dogs. "We still have the play, you know," Calla reminded her.
Lindsay smiled. The Christmas play, as it turned out, had been a stroke of genius on her part. She was pleasantly surprised by how much talent, ability, and initiative her students possessed. The whole town was getting excited, and everyone was doing his or her bit to help get the old movie theater back in working order. It was truly raising the spirits of the little community. But among all of the volunteers who had been helping out, Gage Sinclair remained visibly absent. It amazed and disturbed Lindsay how much she missed him. She hadn't seen or heard from him in weeks, not since he'd come to give the high school his honeybee talk. He had given an excellent presentation, but remained cool and aloof when Lindsay had approached him afterwards to extend her thanks. She'd heard plenty about him, though, from a number of sources. Both Hassie and Lita had taken it upon themselves to drop his name into casual conversation as often as possible. Lindsay knew matchmaking when she heard it. But if she and Gage were going to establish some kind of friendship, it would have happened before now. That was her fault as well as his. She might not be Dakota-born like Gage, but she could be just as stubborn. A light snow started shortly after Calla left, and Lindsay stood at the window looking out, waiting for Lita and Kevin to arrive. After a little while, a large, dark car pulled over and parked at the curb. Lindsay reached for her coat and opened the door, ready to leave. The crisp wind stung her face and brought tears to her eyes. Taking the largest of her bags, she lowered her head until she heard the crunch of footsteps approaching the house. When she glanced up, she discovered it wasn't Kevin who'd come, but his brother.
"Gage?"
Lindsay blinked in surprise.
"Do you have a problem with me driving you into Grand Forks?"
he asked stiffly.
No, it's just that I was expecting Kevin."
"He didn't come, and neither did my mother. Something suddenly came up, and neither of them could get away."
The tautness was still in his voice, as if he expected her to object.
"That's fine."
He took the bag she held and carried it to the trunk of the car, then returned for the rest of her luggage while she murmured her goodbyes to the dogs and locked the house. Within minutes, they were on their way to Grand Forks. Gage sat not more than 2 feet from her. Neither spoke. After 10 minutes, she finally broke the silence.
However it happened, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to inconvenience anyone.
It isn't an inconvenience. It's my mother and her meddling.
Lindsay didn't know what to make of this comment, so she chose to ignore it.
I could have driven myself.
No, you couldn't,
he snapped, and his attitude angered her so much she said nothing more.
I'm sure your family's anxious to see you,
Gage said out of the blue, 10 minutes later, almost as if they were back on friendly terms.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to seeing them.
He frowned. Her answer didn't appear to satisfy him.
Anyone else you're anxious to see?
The question held a hint of contempt, which she didn't understand.
Maddie, of course.
No one else?
Oh, now she understood.
You mean Monty?
He didn't mention his name before.
He stared straight ahead, his concentration on the road. But Lindsay wasn't fooled. Gage wanted to know what would happen once she saw Monty again. It was a question she'd asked herself 1,000 times. He had written her several letters since she had moved to Buffalo Valley. His first letters asked bluntly if she'd changed her mind yet and was ready to move back to Savannah. Lindsay had read these and tossed them without replying. The next few expressed his anger at not having heard from her, and that he would talk to her when she came home for Thanksgiving.
I doubt I'll be able to avoid him, she said, as matter-of-factly as she could.
You still in love with him?
Why do you care?
I don't.
He was quick to assure her.
Just curious is all.
Well, don't be. It's none of your business.
He chuckled at that.
A little defensive, don't you think?
Me? You're the one who leaps to conclusions.
Gage didn't respond, and the silence grew oppressive. But Lindsay held her ground, refusing to apologize. When they reached the airport, Lindsay expected Gage to drop her off and head home. Instead, he parked the car, then carried both bags into the small terminal for her. He stood back while she checked in at the airline counter and received her boarding pass.
You don't need to wait with me, she told him, thinking he'd want to leave.
I know, but I thought I would.
They sat next to each other like silent strangers while they waited for her flight to be announced. The terminal wasn't big, and it seemed half of Grand Forks was either coming or going on this same evening. When her flight was called, Lindsay got quickly to her feet.
That's me, she told him.
Gage stood, too. She swung the strap of her purse over her shoulder.
I appreciate the ride, she said. Thank you.
He acknowledged her words with a nod.
Happy Thanksgiving, Lindsay.
You too.
Her reluctance to leave came as a surprise, but she tried not to let it show. With her purse and her carry-on bag secure in her hands, she turned to line up with the others boarding the same flight.
Lindsay!
His voice sounded desperate, and she turned back, wondering what she'd forgotten. Gage gripped her by the shoulders, his eyes as intense as she'd ever seen them. Then, abruptly, he kissed her, and she returned the kiss. He broke away from her just as suddenly.
Come back, Lindsay,
he said, his eyes burning into hers.
Come back.
On the Friday after Thanksgiving, Lindsay and Maddie did their part to ensure that this was the biggest shopping day of the year. Exhausted, Lindsay sat in her friend's living room, her legs stretched out and her feet on the coffee table.
I can't deal with these crowds anymore, Lindsay complained. I'm just not used to so many people in the same place.
Maddie giggled.
4 months in North Dakota and I hardly recognize you anymore. Where's the super shopper who used to drag me from store to store? Most of the buying I do these days is out of a catalog. And believe it or not, that's the way I like it.
Maddie sank into the chair across from her, a soda in her hand.
I've missed you, Lindsay. It doesn't seem right with you living so far away.
I've missed you, too. You and a few of the more modern conveniences.
You mean like your choice of fast food?
I was thinking more along the lines of real luxuries, like a hairdresser and a dry cleaner's and a bookstore.
Those aren't luxuries.
They are in Buffalo Valley.
Maddie laughed. Tell me more about your chat with Monty.
True to his word, Monty had shown up at her parents' door early Thanksgiving morning. He wanted to talk to Lindsay. At least, that's what he'd said. When it came right down to it, though, he'd wanted to argue with her. Rather than cause any unpleasantness, Lindsay had agreed to see him. That had been her first mistake. Their meeting hadn't gone well. Monty was angry, and no matter what she said, he refused to believe she was serious about breaking off their relationship. Even now, 4 months after her move, he insisted that the entire undertaking was a desperate ploy to entice him to marry her. Again and again, he'd insisted he wasn't going to let her manipulate him into proposing, no matter what she said or did.
I never realized what a colossal ego Monty has, Lindsay said.
Everyone else saw it,
Maddie was unkind enough to point out. A few months ago, Lindsay might have taken offense at her friend's honesty. But not now.
I know it sounds ridiculous, considering how much I wanted to marry him, but I'm actually embarrassed that I was so crazy about Monty.
Grinning broadly, Maddie nodded, as if she knew a delicious secret and was keeping it to herself.
What's that look about? Lindsay demanded. It's very interesting, what you just said. You're truly over Monty. Already you're distancing yourself from him emotionally. You used to look at him through rose-colored glasses. You might have seen his faults, but you ignored them because you convinced yourself you were in love with him. I wondered how long it would take for you to see the light.
Longer than it should have, Lindsay confessed. Now, enough about me and Monty.
Then tell me about Gage Sinclair,
Maddie suggested, deftly changing the subject.
You've talked about practically everyone in Buffalo Valley but him. Has anything changed?
Lindsay did what she could to sidestep the question.
How could it? We're barely on speaking terms.
But let me tell you, sparks fly whenever you two were anywhere near each other. I could see that the day you met in July.
Don't be ridiculous.
Lindsay didn't want to think about Gage. She tried, unsuccessfully, to put him out of her mind all weekend. But again and again, she found herself obsessing about their kiss at the Grand Forks airport. She had to know what it meant.
You know, Maddie said, when you first told me you were taking that teaching job in North Dakota, I thought it was a bit drastic. But after 4 months, I can see a real difference in you. I don't mind telling you, I'm envious.
Envious? I have to drive an hour for a haircut.
I'm serious, Lindsay.
Well, the grocery store's up for sale. You could pull up your stakes and do the same thing,
she said, only half joking. Maddie's gaze held hers.
Don't be shocked if I do exactly that.
All Thanksgiving weekend, Gage thought about how he'd kissed Lindsay and what he'd say to her when he drove back into Grand Forks to meet her return flight. When they did meet, she'd probably ask why he'd kissed her, and Gage didn't know what to say. It had been spontaneous. If he'd stopped to think about it, he'd never have done it. He knew one thing. He'd felt a whole lot easier when he arrived at the airport and found her waiting for him with her pile of luggage. Until that moment, he hadn't been truly convinced that she was coming back.
It's good to see you, Gage, she said, gazing up at him.
He found it difficult to meet her eyes, but managed. She was watching him a little too intently, and he found it unnerving. Lindsay was only passing through Buffalo Valley, and his life. He didn't want to feel anything for her, but the attraction grew more intense with each meeting.
Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
She asked, as they exited the terminal and headed for his car.
Fine, and you?
He returned politely. His warm breath made small clouds as he spoke.
Very nice. Why'd you kiss me?
She asked abruptly, surprising him with her directness.
I don't know.
At least he was honest, whether she wanted to hear it or not.
That's not good enough.
Fine. If you have a theory, I'd be pleased to hear it.
You didn't plan to kiss me?
Hell no.
But you wanted me to come back to Buffalo Valley. You said so.
Yes.
He couldn't very well deny it.
Why did you care, one way or the other?
Her voice was softer now.
The school.
This has nothing to do with the school.
What do you want from me?
The truth.
He scoffed.
You don't want the truth. You can't deal with the truth.
The hell I can't.
It seemed to Gage that Lindsay asked everything and offered nothing.
What are you looking for? For me to lay my heart on the line? Is that it?
Sorry. You're too damn fickle for that.
You love someone else, remember? Monty what's-his-face.
His words were followed by a shocked silence. Then she spoke. Or rather, yelled.
You're the most stubborn, unreasonable man I've ever met. Even more than Monty.
Me? Never in all his life had he met a more exasperating woman.
I'm not gonna let you jerk me around, Lindsay. Nor will I let you use me. You say you want to get over your old boyfriend, so you don't want a relationship. Fine. Then don't give me come-hither looks.
Come-hither looks? How can you say such a thing? Before he could answer, she turned to run back to the terminal. Gage started after her, but he really didn't know what he'd do if he actually caught up with her.
Lindsay!
He called, wanting her to stop before she fell.
Lindsay, it isn't safe!
He was too late. She stumbled in the hard snow, staggered a couple of steps and fell forward, catching herself with her hands. He was at her side instantly. Before he could stop himself, he'd pulled her into his arms, and he was hugging her and telling her how sorry he was. His arms were around her and hers around him. Their breath rose like mist as they knelt in the snow, clinging to each other with a desperation he'd never felt before.
I kissed you because it's all I can think about.
She stared up at him, her eyes huge and so very blue as cornflowers in spring.
Don't you know? Kissing you is all I can think about, too.
Inexplicable tears filled her eyes and she glanced away, not wanting Gage to see. But he must have noticed, because he held her even closer.
Lindsay.
They clung tightly together. They didn't speak again. They didn't need to. With school and rehearsals for the play, plus the renovation of the theater, Lindsay didn't have a lot of time to dwell on the change in her relationship with Gage. She was gratified by the way everyone in town had mobilized to help the high school and to work on the theater. Hassie organized people, requesting their assistance and scheduling tasks. She'd talked Joshua into taking care of the lights, Gage and Dennis into doing carpentry chores, Sarah into repairing and cleaning the curtains, and so on. People in Buffalo Valley did not say no to Hassie. Although they'd talked since Sunday, Lindsay felt shy around Gage. She could hardly believe the things she'd said and done. He'd shouted that she was fickle, that he wasn't willing to lay his heart on the line for her. So she'd handed him hers. They'd held each other in the snow, kissed until she thought she'd melt, then returned to the car, holding hands. Lindsay didn't know where their relationship was leading, but after much reflection decided it wasn't necessary to be sure of the future. Her relationship with Monty had made her cautious and somewhat insecure about her own judgment. For now, she liked spending time with Gage, enjoying his wit and his friendship, and was grateful for his help in readying the old theater for the play. A couple of days before Christmas, Gage escorted his mother into the old theater and had to admit he was impressed with the changes. The task of renovating the boarded-up movie house had seemed hopeless, but the job was done. He admired Lindsay's grit and determination. Once again, the community had come together for a common goal because of Lindsay. First the school, then the theater. Even Jacob and Marta Hansen had contributed, without their usual long list of complaints. The old theater had responded graciously to the attention, and, looking around, he saw hints of its former glory. Now a Christmas tree stood where there'd once been a player organ, and someone, Gage suspected Lindsay, had strung evergreen boughs around the huge room.
Oh, look, Gage, Lita said, nodding to the left. The hunters are here.
Gage recognized a number of people he hadn't seen in a long time. Word had spread quickly about this Christmas play. Farmers and ranchers from various neighboring towns had come and brought their families. There were so few entertainment opportunities available to the region these days.
It does my heart good to see all these people, his mother added.
Every seat was filled, and if Lindsay hadn't reserved the first few rows for the parents and families of the high school class, Gage figured he'd be lucky to find two seats together. He ushered his mother to their fifth row seats, then sat down himself. He didn't like to think about what would happen at the end of the school year. He knew he wanted Lindsay to stay, but he didn't count on it. She'd brought energy and hope when she'd moved to Buffalo Valley. Her enthusiasm had affected the entire community. Here it was, the end of a year that had been filled with bad news, and people were laughing and talking. There was a sense of festivity, of excitement. Instead of concentrating on what they lacked, people, himself included, were grateful for what they had. He would never be a rich man by the world's standards, yet he had everything he needed to be happy, and he thanked the new school teacher for reminding him of that. Lindsay was responsible for a lot of the good things that were taking place in Buffalo Valley. Kevin actually looked forward to classes, and Gage was well aware that his brother's renewed enthusiasm for school could largely be attributed to Lindsay. Not since grade school had Kevin shown such eagerness to learn. But it was more than that. Lindsay had motivated the people of Buffalo Valley to show this generosity, this pride in who they were. She'd given them a way to recapture a spirit of community and of Christmas. Maybe not all of them would admit that, but Gage knew it to be true. He supposed he'd fallen in love with her that first day he'd met her, last summer. Try as he might, he'd been unable to forget her. When she'd accepted the job and moved to Buffalo Valley, he'd tried to ignore her, knowing, as he had at their first meeting, that she could become someone important in his life. I can hardly wait, Lita said, after she'd settled into her seat. Oh, I hope nothing goes wrong. Gage read the program and noted that Buffalo Bob had taken advantage of the promotional opportunity with a full-page advertisement, including a 10% off coupon. He'd sponsored the printing of both the program and the posters, which had been designed by Rachel Fisher and hung in three different counties. Many families would make use of the dinner coupon. Gage suspected Buffalo Bob would do more business in the next three nights than at any other time since he'd opened his doors. Chalk another one up for Lindsay. Hiring her had been a boon to their town's economy. Look, his mother said proudly, pointing to Kevin's name in the program. All 12 members of the high school, plus a handful of younger students, were listed. Lindsay had also made sure that everyone who'd worked on getting the theater ready had received an acknowledgement. The chatter lowered to an excited hush as the curtain parted and Lindsay stepped center stage. She was nervous and struggling to hide it, holding a small white card in a death grip, her gaze nervously darting around the full auditorium. Gage liked to think she was seeking him out, and he smiled at her, trying to lend her confidence. But when she spoke, her voice was strong and sure. Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome each of you to our Christmas play. I'm happy to announce that we're sold out for the first night. The box office just informed me that they're standing room only. Enthusiastic applause followed. When she left the stage, Gage was gratified by the cheers and loud clapping. She deserved it. The play was everything he'd known it would be. Lindsay's students had taken incidents from their grandparents' lives and built a play around their hardships and triumphs. People had made memorable Christmas celebrations out of very little in those days. Some homemade gifts and decorations, a community carol singing service, dinner with family and friends. When it was over, the actors, holding hands, took two curtain calls, their faces flushed with pleasure at the overwhelming response to their efforts. Both Gage and Lita had been invited to Lindsay's house for a cast party following the play. His mother had baked several batches of Christmas cookies, and Gage had volunteered to mix a punch, two versions, one for the kids, the other for adults. Hassie had gone ahead to open the house and put the dogs in the back bedroom, and by the time his mother had finished visiting with people, Gage saw that the students were closing down the theater. Gage arrived only a couple of minutes before Lindsay. He hadn't even taken his coat off yet when she walked into the house. She went directly to him. He wished they could be alone for a few minutes, but since that wasn't possible, he reached for her hand. You did a wonderful job. Everyone did. Her smile was big enough to drown in. She stood on the tips of her toes and kissed him, happiness radiating from her. I'm so proud of everyone. The kids were wonderful, and it felt as if, for the first time, the whole community was behind me.
You have a right to be proud. Include yourself in this, Lindsay. You did some fabulous work here.
This has been an incredible night, one of the best of my entire life.
Her eyes sparkled like jewels. She sighed and leaned her head against his shoulder.
You're coming for Christmas?
His mother had told him only yesterday that she planned to invite Lindsay to the farmhouse for the day. Until then, he'd assumed she'd be flying home.
I'll be there.
Good. He kissed the bridge of her nose.
So will I.
She closed her eyes and sighed. I have a wonderful surprise.
For me?
No.
Then who?
Kevin.
Tell me.
Her beautiful eyes met his. I shouldn't, but this is too good to keep to myself. I had Kevin research art schools and asked him if he could choose any two, which ones would he pick? He told me, but he said it was a wasted effort because there's no way on earth he could ever attend.
There isn't.
Oh, ye of little faith, Lindsay said, kissing him again. I wrote to each school and told them about Kevin and included samples of his work. Gage went still, dread working through him. They've both sent me letters full of praise for his talent and included applications, plus scholarship information. Gage, there's a very good possibility Kevin could get a scholarship. Gage said nothing. Isn't that wonderful? Her expressive eyes registered her surprise at his lack of response.
No, Kevin's a farmer, not an artist.
But
I don't mean to discourage you, Lindsay, but this is an area that's none of your concern. Kevin's attending agricultural college, and that's it. I can't afford to send him.
There might very well be a scholarship, and...
Lindsay, please, I don't want to argue. Not tonight. We'll talk about it another day. Tell Kevin if you must, but keep in mind that it won't make any difference.
Unwilling to end their evening on a sour note, Gage kissed her one last time, then hurried into the kitchen to prepare the Christmas punch. Christmas Day turned out to be a disaster for Lindsay. She didn't want to argue with Gage, and she knew he hadn't wanted that either, and yet they let it happen. Despite their best efforts, they fought over the issue of Kevin's attending art school. Each had strong feelings about what was right, and before they could stop themselves, they were embroiled in an argument that threatened to destroy their relationship before it even had a chance to get started.
"What's my brother going to do with an art degree?"
Gage challenged her after she'd excitedly told Kevin the news. She'd waited until after dinner, when they'd all gathered in the living room for coffee and dessert. There are any number of ways Kevin might use his talent, Lindsay said, angered that Gage wouldn't drop the subject.
A scholarship to art school, it's a gift. You don't refuse a gift.
Kevin sat silently across from them. Hassie came into the room, carrying the coffee pot. Lita followed with a tray holding the sugar bowl and a pitcher of cream.
Do we have to discuss this now? Hassie asked, glancing from one to the other.
Not at all, Lindsay said, eager to move on to a different topic. Gage wasn't willing to drop the subject, however.
My brother owns this land. This is his inheritance, his heritage, and he isn't going to turn his back on it.
But he loves art.
Lindsay knew that Kevin had talent. The boy was passionate about art, and she refused to discount his talent or his desire.
I didn't say he couldn't draw if that's what he wants. But as far as I'm concerned, art school's a waste of time and effort. He should be taking business and agricultural classes, not art. We can find the money for agricultural college because that's an investment in his future. Art school isn't. We just can't afford it.
But if Kevin gets a scholarship, money won't be an issue.
There are other issues besides money. There's Kevin's responsibility to his family, to this farm, to...
But what about his responsibility to his talent?
Lindsay asked. Gage turned to glare at her.
You aren't from North Dakota. You don't know.
I know plenty,
Lindsay had thrown back at him, resenting his words. Despite what Gage said, she was part of the Buffalo Valley community. She might not be Dakota-born, but that didn't make her understand hardships and trouble any the less.
Children, please, Lita said, sitting down with her coffee. We can decide all these things later, not today. It's Christmas.
The story's continued on the other side of the cassette.
For a moment, she thought Gage would be willing to let it go, but then he looked at his brother.
Kevin, this is your life. What do you want?
Poor Kevin stared at them, his face stricken.
You can't put him on the spot like this,
Lindsay cried.
It isn't fair.
He needs to decide,
Gage said coldly.
Once you understand that my brother knows his duty, maybe you'll stop filling his head with this nonsense.
He glanced at his brother.
Tell her, Kevin. The boy gazed straight ahead, his eyes unwavering. This land is my inheritance. I'll be a farmer, just like Gage said. Gage's expression was so smug, Lindsay stood up and walked into the kitchen before she could say something that would make matters even worse. Other than their polite farewells later in the day, Gage and Lindsay didn't speak again. The Saturday following Christmas, Gage found himself at Buffalo Bob's Three of a Kind. He and Lindsay had not spoken since Christmas Day, and though he was eager to end their squabble, he had not yet figured out how to make the first gesture towards reconciliation. He nodded to Buffalo Bob as he entered and slouched onto a stool next to Brandon Wyatt. Gage hadn't seen Brandon in weeks, and he was surprised at how awful he looked. From the way he was slouched on the stool, huddled over his beer, Gage could tell he was hurting.
"Have a nice Christmas?"
he asked casually. Brandon glanced up, irritation in his face.
"Just great. Joni left me."
"Left?" Gage repeated, sounding incredulous.
"Moved out, lock, stock, and barrel."
"What about the kids?"
"They went with her."
Brandon stared straight ahead, looking at the wall as if there was something really important written there, instead of a neon sign advertising the brand of beer he drank.
"I'm sorry to hear that," Gage said.
"It's my own damn fault," Brandon said, showing emotion for the first time. His voice vibrated with anger.
"I should have known better than to get involved with a city girl."
Gage didn't say anything, but Brandon's words had affected him. If ever Gage had seen a city girl, it was Lindsay Snyder.
"Fargo isn't exactly the big city," Gage commented.
"It's big enough. She never knew what it meant to be a farmer's wife. Never had a farmer's mentality."
"It's not her fault. She just didn't know."
"That's why she left?" Gage asked.
"She left because we're broke. And I wouldn't sell the farm."
Neither man spoke much after that. No more talk was needed. Gage and Brandon both understood that the lifeblood of the family was in the land. Without it, they lost their purpose, their identity. It wasn't that Brandon wouldn't sell the land that had been in his family for three generations. He couldn't. Without the farm, he wouldn't know who or what he was. Gage was over at Brandon Wyatt's farm when Lindsay phoned the first Friday of the new year. His mother handed him the message when he walked in the door. He stared at it a long time, not knowing what to think. Brandon's warning about getting involved with a city girl had struck a nerve with him. As attracted as he was to Lindsay, and much as he admired what she'd done for the town, he knew she didn't really understand their ways.
"Are you going to call her back?"
Lita asked, when he didn't instantly head toward the phone. In the last week, Gage had thought about calling her plenty. Would have, if he hadn't run into Brandon Wyatt at Bob's that day, just before New Year's. His neighbor was in a world of pain, and Gage realized that if he did seek out Lindsay, he'd be courting the same kind of troubles.
"Did she say what she wanted?" he asked his mother.
"Wouldn't you like to find out for yourself?"
Without another word, he grabbed his hat again and headed back out the door. Driving into town to see Lindsay was either the smartest move he'd ever made or the dumbest. Gage thought about what he'd say when she looked at him with her big blue eyes. He hoped to remain calm and dispassionate. Let her do the talking. But he knew that was too much to expect.
He'd missed her. Missed their conversations. Their kisses.
It was snowing when he arrived on her doorstep. He stood under the porch light, rang the doorbell, and waited for the inevitable barking. Lindsay answered almost immediately, dogs at her side, as if she'd been anticipating his arrival. He wouldn't put it past his mother to have called ahead and informed her that he was on his way.
"Gage, come in." Her eyes told him how pleased she was to see him, and he suspected his own expression mirrored hers. She looked good to him. So good. "I'm glad you're here," she said simply.
"I am too."
He wasn't so proud he couldn't admit the truth. Lindsay took a step toward him, and at the same moment he moved toward her. It seemed an eternity since he'd last held her, and their kiss was explosive. It always seemed to be like that, this powerful need that erupted every time they touched. If the kissing was this spectacular, he could only imagine how their lovemaking would be. After two or three kisses, Gage had to force himself to stop. It wasn't easy.
He brushed his thumb over her moist lips while he struggled to end it there. They had to talk. He sensed that this would be either the beginning or the end for them.
"I debated a long time before calling you," she said as she led him to the sofa. "I think we should talk some more about Kevin and the scholarship."
His back was ramrod straight as he sat. She felt a sudden fear of losing him. She could feel it, see it. He was pulling away from her, emotionally as well as physically.
"I understand about duty and responsibility, and that Kevin's future is already planned for him, but I also believe strongly that he should apply for the scholarships. If he's rejected, then nothing's lost. And if he's accepted, well, we can all cross that bridge when we get to it. If he is accepted, he'll never doubt his talent. He'll know that if circumstances were different, he could have pursued art had he wanted, and still might if the future allows."
"You encouraged him to fill out the applications?"
She nodded.
"Kevin agreed?"
"He wasn't sure. Yes, he agreed after I talked to him."
Heart sinking, she clasped her hands in front of her. Gage looked past her, but she didn't miss the expression on his face. He thought she'd betrayed him. That had never been her intention, never entered her mind.
I felt you should know," she said, rubbing her palms together. "That's all."
Gage shook his head. "Brandon said it last week, and again today. I took his warning with a grain of salt, knowing he's bitter and miserable over Joni and the kids being gone." Lindsay was confused.
"What has Brandon Wyatt got to do with any of this?"
"You don't understand us."
"Us? What the hell is that supposed to mean?"
He held her look.
"You aren't one of us."
"Are you saying I'm an outsider?"
"You mean well, Lindsay, but you don't understand. People here believe that other folks should be allowed to make their own choices and live by them. We're independent, self-reliant. We don't interfere in other people's lives or want ours interfered with. That's what you don't understand."
He walked to the door, pausing to reach for his coat. "Don't do this, Lindsay. Leave Kevin alone. He didn't ask for anyone to intrude in his life."
"I'm not going to invade his life. I'm giving him a gift."
He glared at her.
"Gift? You talk about a scholarship for Kevin and call that a gift? Don't you see? Can't you understand? You insist on giving people gifts they don't need or want."
He moved to open the door.
"Gage," she said, stopping him.
She didn't want him to leave. Not like this. Not when so much remained unspoken. He turned to look at her.
"I want nothing to do with this. Can I make it any plainer than that?"
Lindsay felt numb.
"No, I guess you can't."
Gage opened the door, and this time she didn't stop him. The first week of February, it seemed as if spring would never come. And winter pressed down on Lindsay, heavy and bitter cold. The wind hissed and howled across stark, barren land, the white fields almost featureless. The town looked bleaker than ever in the gray light of winter, with dirty drifts of snow at the side of the roads. With spring apparently far off, Lindsay's students had grown listless and bored with their studies. What little enthusiasm she'd been able to muster was forced, and hardly seemed worth the effort. It didn't help that she felt oppressed by personal problems, too. She'd barely seen Gage all month, and when they were together, their behavior toward each other was guarded. She longed to end the strain between them, but couldn't, not without making painful compromises. And just when she thought things couldn't get any worse, Monty called. Since Christmas, she'd heard from him only sporadically. Most days, he was far removed from her thoughts.
"How did you get my phone number? It's unlisted."
"Oh, I have my ways."
Lindsay could imagine. Most likely, her uncle had gotten it from her mother and passed it on, intentionally or not.
"Aren't you going to ask me why I phoned?"
"You've been hurt? You're ill."
He was one of those men who always seemed to need a lot of sympathy when they were injured or sick.
"No, no, nothing like that,"
he said, then inhaled as though to calm himself.
"You can't know how difficult this decision was to make. And now that I've made it, I can't think of anything else."
"What decision?"
"I suspect the best way is to just say this. Lindsay, I made a terrible mistake when I let you out of my life. I love you. I've always loved you. I want us to get married.
His words sucked the breath straight from her lungs. Not long ago, she would have given anything to hear this. Now, it was too late. Monty, please, don't do this.
Hear me out. That's all I ask. Last summer when you left, I believed you were moving to Buffalo Gulch to...
Buffalo Valley.
Yes, whatever. I believed it was a gimmick, a way of trapping me into marrying you when I wasn't ready to commit.
This was old news to Lindsay. I told you before I left that wasn't the case.
I know that now, but is there still a chance for us, Lindsay?
A chance? He really didn't understand. It was over. Completely and totally over. Furthermore, she knew through the grapevine, mostly from Maddie, that Monty hadn't lost any time looking for her replacement. He'd dated several women in the months she'd been gone.
I didn't know what I had in you. You wanted marriage.
And you didn't. We'd been through all this. She heard him take a deep breath.
If marriage is what it takes to keep you in my life, then so be it.
This is a serious proposal? He paused.
Yes,
he finally said, his voice stiff. Laughing probably wasn't the most delicate or diplomatic response, but she couldn't help herself. Monty, forgive me for being so insensitive, but no woman wants to spend the rest of her life with a man who grits his teeth and offers to marry her. You make it sound like being tied to a stake.
I can't lose you.
You already did, 7 months ago. He argued with her some more, insisting she loved him. This time, she interrupted him. Monty, I did love you, and I still have feelings for you, but not like I used to.
You could learn to love me again, couldn't you?
Oh, Monty, can't you see it's too late?
No, it can't be.
I don't mean to be cruel, but that's the only way you're going to hear me. It's over. Lindsay had come too far in the last 7 months to feel any victory. She wasn't interested in vengeance or reprisals. She wanted nothing from Monty now. If anything, his proposal embarrassed her.
You said you'd be back after a year. At least promise you'll give me another chance once you're home.
Monty, please.
Don't give up on me, Lindsay. Please. I didn't know how much I was going to miss you. Didn't know how bleak my life would feel without you in it. I want us to get married. I was sincere about that. And if you still want, we could have a baby. I'm not opposed to a family. You know that.
Monty, I don't think...
Don't say anything else. Wait until you're home.
Snow fell during the first and second weeks of March, and then everyone was talking about Easter and the upcoming spring break. Each afternoon, as soon as school let out, Kevin Betts routinely stopped at the small post office on his way home. It was early yet, Miss Snyder had told him, to be expecting any kind of response from the art schools in Chicago and San Francisco. Nevertheless, each and every day he went to the post office, hoping.
What'll you do if you get a scholarship? Jessica asked him one afternoon.
Nothing. He shrugged as he said it, as if the chances of that happening were too remote to consider. Kevin knew Jessica wanted him to stay in Buffalo Valley, just like his mother and Gage did. The only person who understood was Miss Snyder. This new teacher, a stranger, an outsider, was the only person who believed in his talent, who encouraged him to dream. In the last 7 months, it had been Miss Snyder who taught him to believe in himself. Until she'd arrived, Kevin had kept his sketches private. Every now and then, he'd draw something simple, like a flower, to impress a girl. Jessica liked to draw, too, and that was one of the reasons he liked her. But even Jessica didn't really know how important his art was to him. Not the way Miss Snyder did. Soon after school started, she'd seen his sketchbook. It was a fluke that it had even happened. Normally, he didn't bring his drawings to school. He'd been working on a sketch of Gage during a study period when Miss Snyder happened upon him. When Miss Snyder had glanced up from the penciled sketch, there'd been tears in her eyes. Luckily, it was only the two of them in the classroom, since he'd stayed late to finish the sketch. The tears had embarrassed her, and she blinked them away, not wanting him to see. But he had, and she'd won him over that afternoon, just like she'd eventually won over every other student. That same day, she'd looked at some of his other work, too, but had repeatedly gone back to that first sketch. Soon afterward, she'd talked to him about a scholarship to art school. Kevin had tried to tell her it wouldn't do any good, that there wasn't any money for college. Even with a scholarship covering his expenses, he couldn't leave the farm, or his mother. He had responsibilities, family obligations. Gage had carried the responsibility of the farm for too long. Gage needed a life apart from Kevin and their mother, his own land to farm. He'd never said a word in complaint, but Kevin knew that Gage longed for his freedom. He'd come home from the army, and then college, ready to start his own life. And then Kevin's dad had died, and Gage had put all his own dreams on hold. Kevin couldn't ask him to do that any longer. Finally, one day, Kevin got a reply. The envelope was the only one inside the box. Even without taking it out, he could see the words, San Francisco Art Institute. Kevin thought his heart had stopped. He took out the letter and stared at his name before stuffing it inside his backpack and going in search of Miss Snyder. He went straight to the school, where she lingered most afternoons. Since the school door was unlocked, he went inside and saw her sitting at her desk. Not wanting to interrupt her reading, he waited for her to notice him. It didn't take her long to glance up. "A letter arrived from the San Francisco Art Institute," he said, walking toward her. "And?" She stood, bracing her hands against the edge of her desk. He looked away, calling himself the coward he was.
"I didn't open it."
"Any particular reason?" He nodded.
"I couldn't."
He unzipped the side pocket of his book bag and pulled it out.
"You do it."
"Me?" She frowned at the letter. She had the right, he decided, seeing that it was Miss Snyder who'd spent all that time helping him fill out the applications and submitting a portfolio and the necessary forms. Financial aid was available, but he'd need much more than that. Since they were aiming high, they had requested a full scholarship and a small stipend for living expenses. Miss Snyder dragged in a deep breath, then tore into the envelope and extracted a single sheet of paper. Kevin tensed and watched her face. Then, because he shouldn't care this damn much, he turned away and walked to the back of the schoolroom. Miss Snyder didn't say anything for so long that he couldn't stand the suspense any longer and whirled around.
"What did the letter say?"
he demanded hoarsely. That was when he saw the tears in her eyes.
"They want to offer you a full ride."
The words hit him like a powerful punch. He sank into a chair and waited for the shock to leave him.
"Aren't you going to say anything?" Miss Snyder asked.
I don't know what to say. I mean, that's great, I guess."
"Great?" she repeated. "That's the understatement of the year. Oh, Kevin, don't you realize what this means? You're brilliant. One day your work will hang..."
She stopped herself abruptly.
"The farmer artist," he said,
forcing a brightness into his voice.
"Right."
They both knew, without saying it, that the scholarship meant nothing. Not for him. Kevin drove back from town with the window down and the cold wind buffeting his face until he lost feeling in his cheeks and had trouble seeing the road. The wicked cold brought stinging tears to his eyes and blurred his vision. He told Jessica he'd stop by after school, but as he neared the turnoff, he realized he wasn't going to stop at his girlfriend's house. He just kept driving until he could no longer see the road, and the lump in his throat wouldn't let him swallow. He pulled off to the side, close to the ditch, and sat with his hands clenching the steering wheel. After a while, he closed his eyes, trying to control the frustration and disappointment. He reminded himself that, even as a farmer, he could be an artist. It brought no comfort or solace. He looked at the letter from the San Francisco Art Institute, and it reminded him what a selfish bastard he was. He wanted the chance to be the kind of artist he knew he could be, but that meant Gage wouldn't be able to do what he wanted. So, art school just wasn't going to happen. Obligation, duty, responsibility, they all worked against him. He owed Gage. His mother had pointed that out every day for weeks, as if he were about to sell the farm out from under them all. The farm was supposed to be this wonderful blessing, but Kevin considered it an albatross around his neck. Like in The Ancient Mariner. That winter, Miss Snyder had the entire high school class read the Melville novel, Billy Budd. Lately, Kevin had begun to feel like he had a noose around his neck as well. strangling his creativity and his joy. Some days, like today, he didn't know if life was worth living.
Gage, have you seen Kevin? His mother asked around 7 o'clock that night.
Gage sat in his study, going over a mountain of paperwork.
Not since this morning, he murmured, unconcerned.
His younger brother had been brooding for days. Damned if Gage knew what was wrong with him. He suspected Kevin fancied himself some temperamental artist, and that gave him the right to subject the entire family to his moods. Come to think of it, though, Kevin had been more morose than usual. An hour later, his mother came into the study. She looked tense and worried.
Jessica phoned and asked why Kevin didn't show up. She hasn't seen him all night. They were supposed to study for a test together.
Maybe he went over to see the Loomis twins.
His mother shook her head.
Not according to Jessica. She's talked to everyone in the class, and no one's seen Kevin.
Not knowing what to think, Gage set his pen aside.
There's no need for alarm. I'm sure he's perfectly fine.
My son's missing, and all you can say is not to worry? Anything might have happened. He could be lying in a ditch, bleeding to death, for all you know.
Have you talked to Lindsay?
He asked. A look of relief washed over her face.
No, that's probably where he is. Time must have gotten away from him. He just didn't realize.
She reached for the phone, and Gage crossed his arms and listened to her side of the conversation. It soon became apparent that Lindsay didn't have any news of Kevin either.
She hasn't seen him for hours!
Gage knew one thing. He fully intended to give his kid brother hell for worrying their mother like this.
I think we should phone the police!
I'm sure he's all right, although he won't be once I get my hands on him.
The phone rang just then, and Gage nearly yanked it off the desk in his eagerness to answer.
Hello?
Can I speak to Mr. Betts? This is in regard to his son, Kevin Betts.
Gage stiffened and avoided meeting his mother's eyes.
Who's calling, please?
The Rugby police.
Rugby? It seemed impossible that Kevin would have driven that far, but obviously he had. Gage couldn't think of a single reason why. Rugby was 100 miles west of Buffalo Valley, in the geographical center of North America.
We have Kevin here at the police station.
For what? Gage demanded. A list of possibilities raced through his mind, but no scenario seemed acceptable.
Can I speak to his father?
I'm sorry, he's dead. You can speak to me. I'm Kevin's half-brother.
Gage, what is it?
His mother was close to ripping the phone from his hand. He cupped the mouthpiece.
Kevin's with the Rugby police.
What?
If you'll give me a chance to find out, I'll let you know.
We found him outside of town,
the police officer continued.
He'd run out of gas.
That isn't a crime, is it?
No,
the officer continued. Then he hesitated.
Is Kevin undergoing some personal problems at the moment?
What damn business is that of yours?
Gage asked angrily, taking a dislike to this form of questioning.
I suggest you come and pick Kevin up.
Has he been drinking?
Gage asked. Lita gasped and placed her hand over her mouth.
To the best of my knowledge, he hasn't.
Drugs?
A predictable gasp followed from Lita.
No, perhaps it'd be best if you talked to the doctor yourself.
Doctor?
No one had said anything about Kevin needing a doctor.
You had to do it, didn't you?
Gage shouted at Lindsay as he jumped out of his pickup. He slammed the truck door and stalked across the street to Lindsay's house, where she'd just parked. Apparently, he'd been waiting for her, and from the way he stormed toward her, he wasn't in the best of moods. Lindsay wasn't sure she was up to dealing with a verbal harangue from Gage. She raised her hand to stop him.
Can you tell me what's wrong without yelling at me?
You couldn't leave well enough alone with Kevin, could you?
Kevin? Is something wrong with Kevin?
He'd missed a couple of days of school, but then so had Bert Loomis, and she'd assumed Kevin was out with the same flu bug.
You pressured him into applying for that scholarship.
I didn't pressure him into anything.
You encouraged him.
Yes, I did. Do you have any idea how talented he is?
You strung that 17-year-old boy along, not once considering the consequences of what you were doing.
He frowned heavily, as if what she'd done was despicable.
He has a dream. Everyone's got a dream.
But you had to go and plant the idea of leaving Buffalo Valley in his mind, going to some fancy art school.
I've told you, neither his mother nor I can afford art school for Kevin. This town can't afford to lose our young people, and you encouraged both.
But the scholarship, he can't do it. And now I'm the one who has to tell him that. Thank you very much, Lindsay Snyder. I know you came here with the best of intentions, but you don't know us. You don't know our ways, and you certainly don't know me and my brother. So kindly stay the hell out of our lives.
She felt the blood drain from her face.
He slammed out of the house with such force, the living room windows shook.
May 1st. Dear Maddie, I just made the most difficult decision of my life. I'm leaving Buffalo Valley. For a while, I'd actually started to think of this place as home. I even considered staying, but not anymore. If I sound miserable, it's because I am. How anyone could mess up as much as I have in the last few months is beyond me. All I can say in my own defense is that my intentions were good. Perhaps Marta Hansen, the grocer's wife, said it best. Last week she told me I was an outsider and would always be an outsider. No matter how long I lived in Buffalo Valley, I'd never think the same as they do. Never understand their ways, despite the fact that my father was born and raised in this town. I didn't realize one had to be born in the Dakotas to be accepted. Marta wasn't insulting me. She was merely stating the truth. Her one fault was that she was insensitive to my feelings, but what can I say? She was right. I haven't spoken to Gage since our last big blowout. By contrast, Monty phones me every day. He's serious about marrying me and can't accept that I'm no longer interested. Frankly, I thank God every day that I left him when I did. He seems like a stranger to me now, and I can't make myself care. A year ago, I would have leaped at his marriage proposal. Kevin Betts, Gage's brother, went through a rough period while he wrestled with rejecting the scholarship from the San Francisco Art Institute. I don't know who it was harder on, him or me. In the end, all I did was give him false hope. He was born with the understanding that he would be a farmer. It's tied to duty and family and responsibility, and it's part of what makes me an outsider. I simply and truly don't understand. For Kevin's sake, I wish I did. Several of the friends I've made here have tried to get me to change my mind. That's what made deciding to leave so damn difficult. If Gage had said one word, one small word, I would have stayed. Gladly signed my name to the contract for another year. His silence said it all. The last day of school is May 29th, and Joshua McKenna told me he's been in touch with two women who are interested in the teaching position. He hugged me and said how grateful he was that I filled in during this transition time. My dad's flying out, and we'll caravan it back to Georgia the same way as I arrived last summer. A little older, and a whole lot wiser. I'll see you soon. Love, Lindsay. Rachel Fisher sat in the middle of a stack of boxes in Lindsay's living room. Both dogs were asleep by the fireplace, as though life was completely unchanged. "I can't believe you're actually going to leave," Rachel complained. "We were only getting to know you." The outcry that had come when her students learned she wouldn't be returning had been a balm to Lindsay's badly injured pride. Almost every family had voiced regret. As she'd told Maddie, the one person who hadn't asked her to stay was Gage. Without saying a word, he'd been the one who'd made it plain she should go. That willful, stubborn farmer had stood by and said nothing. She really had a talent, Lindsay thought sardonically. A gift for falling in love with the wrong man. First Monty, and now Gage. She'd taken all the lessons she wanted to learn on the care and upkeep of a broken heart. She'd survived the last time around, and she would again, but it wouldn't be easy.
Sarah wanted me to thank you for everything you did for Calla, Rachel told her. She said that for the first time in her life, Calla thought school was fun.
Impulsively, the two women hugged, and Lindsay went out to the porch and watched her friend walk away. The months had flown by so quickly, far too quickly. Had she stayed, Lindsay liked to think she might have become good friends, not only with Rachel, but with Sarah Stern and the others. Her father's plane was landing in Grand Forks the following morning, and Dennis Ehrlicher had volunteered to meet his flight, then help him arrange for the moving van. The high school students were throwing her a party that night, and then early the next morning, Lindsay and her father would head back to Savannah. It all seemed straightforward, decided,
But she didn't know how she was going to leave Buffalo Valley and do it with a smile. Not when her heart ached, and she had so many regrets. Gage knew very well that it was Lindsay's car that had passed the country road bordering his land. He sat on the tractor, the tiller churning up the dark, rich earth in preparation for flax, beans, and millet. He stared straight ahead, not wanting to look, pretending it didn't matter. Her leaving was for the best. He told himself that so often, he almost believed it. The choice to stay or go had been up to her, and she'd come to her decision without any help from him. From what Kevin had said, he knew that Lindsay was driving out first thing tomorrow morning. Her father was flying in later today. Apparently, she was coming to make her farewells. Anger whirled inside him. He wished to hell she'd just go and be done with it. All she'd done since she got here was stir up trouble. She delved into issues that were none of her concern, got involved with other people's business that was better left alone. With these thoughts came others, flooding into his mind, saturating his memory. The feelings of pride and community Lindsay had restored to Buffalo Valley. The Christmas play that had brought ranchers and farmers together for a celebration of the season. She'd organized a Valentine's dance that was the closest thing to a prom these teenagers were likely to get. And there was the graduation ceremony held at the theater only a few days earlier. A high school graduating class of four. And the quarterly school newspaper. The yearbook, complete with photos. What Lindsay had done for Buffalo Valley was one thing, but how she touched him was another. Almost from the moment they'd met, he'd tried to push her out of his mind. He recalled the first time they'd kissed, and how his heart had nearly leapt from his body. He'd known then what was going to happen, and had been powerless to stop it. Throughout the school year, he'd been cautious, careful. He hadn't wanted to fall in love with Lindsay Snyder, but he had. All at once, he knew. He couldn't do it. Couldn't stand by and let her return to Savannah. The instant he saw her car, he knew for a fact that if he let her leave, he would regret it the rest of his life. She was the window that allowed the light into his world. With a sense of urgency, he shifted gears, and the tractor belched thick black smoke. He was 15 minutes from the house, and he raced across tilled, planted land, crisscrossing rows, afraid he'd be too late. When the farmhouse came into view, he knew he'd arrived in the nick of time. The tractor roared toward the barn. He cut the engine, and with one powerful bound, jumped down. Lindsay stood next to her car, and her gaze held him prisoner. He kept his eyes on her as he approached. "Lindsay came to say goodbye," his mother told him sadly. He was about to tell his mother he was sure she had something in the kitchen that needed tending, but before he could say a word, Kevin appeared. He was in one hell of a hurry, judging by the way he'd barreled into the yard, tires spewing loose dirt like rooster tails. He sprang down from the cab and raced toward Gage. "You aren't going to let her go, are you?"
"I..."
"Dennis Ehrlicher just phoned Sarah Stern, and Calla told me it isn't Lindsay's father who's going to drive her home."
"My father wasn't on the flight?"
Lindsay turned toward Kevin.
"Well, yeah, he was."
The boy looked over his shoulder, then back at Gage.
"But there's also some guy named Monty who claims he's going to marry Lindsay."
Gage's jaw tightened.
"You're getting married?"
he demanded, the shock of it making his voice gruff. He wanted it understood right now that he wasn't going to politely step aside. Lindsay blinked. She seemed to be in as much shock as Gage himself.
"No, of course not."
She glanced out over the fields at the crazy zigzag way he'd crossed the plowed rows.
"You were coming for me?"
"Before Gage answers that, I'd like to talk to all of you," Kevin said, standing to his full height and meeting their eyes. "I want to answer her," Gage said, his heart burning with the need to tell Lindsay he loved her.
"In a minute, Gage," Kevin said forcefully. "All right?"
Gage studied his half-brother and saw that whatever he had to say was important.
"All right."
Kevin thanked him with a courteous nod.
"Miss Snyder, first off, I don't mean any disrespect, but I know you don't want to leave Buffalo Valley."
"Kevin, please, if you just let me finish." He turned to Gage, and for the first time, he had the face of a man, strong and determined.
"And you, big brother, don't want her to go either."
"No, I don't," he admitted. If his brother had given him the opportunity, he would have told her so himself.
"Okay," Kevin said. "This is the deal."
"The deal?"
Gage arched his brows. His brother had never sounded this firm or confident before.
Gage, you're marrying Miss Snyder. And Miss Snyder, you're staying right here in Buffalo Valley. It's where you belong. Some of the adults might be old fuddy-duddies, but there isn't a one of us high schoolers who want you to go. You're the best thing that ever happened to our school, and my brother's been crazy about you for months.
Gage took a step forward. This had gone on long enough.
If you don't mind, I prefer to do my own talking.
Son, Lita said, holding out her arm and stopping him. Let Kevin finish.
Thanks, Mom.
The teenager's grin was enormous.
Okay, I'm going to art school.
But you refused the scholarship, Lindsay said, and Gage heard the utter defeat in her voice.
Here's the best part, Kevin said, his eyes bright.
He pulled an envelope from his shirt pocket.
I was offered another full ride from the school in Chicago. 2 scholarships.
But that's the top school in the country. Lindsay pressed her fingertips to her lips.
Gage, you're planning to buy your own land, which is crazy. You have it already. I hereby bequeath this farm to you.
He made a sweeping gesture with his arms.
It's yours. It's always been yours. Mom,
he said, nodding in her direction,
you're moving to town.
I am? Lita's eyes rounded with shock.
You can stay in Lindsay's house. It's about to be vacated.
Lindsay's mouth fell open.
Mom, Gage and Lindsay love you, but they're going to be newlyweds. 3's a crowd.
You seem to have everything worked out,
Gage said, feeling both amused and oddly respectful.
But about the farm, you don't just hand over land this valuable.
Don't fight me on this, Gage. I know. I know you refuse it as a gift. Well, big brother, this is one argument you aren't going to win. You want to pay me for the farm? Then fine. You can pick up my college living expenses.
Oh, Kevin, Lita said with a sigh.
2 scholarship offers. It was meant to be, Kevin announced. Now, I suspect Lindsay and Gage need a few minutes in private, so, Mom, why don't you and I just disappear into the house?
Gage stood before Lindsay, his heart full of feeling. Full of love. Her beautiful topaz blue eyes were brimming with tears.
Don't cry, darling.
Sniffling, she rubbed the back of her hand across the high arch of her cheek.
You were willing to break my heart, but you can't stand to see me cry?
Gage had to hold her. He closed the space between them and gently took her in his arms. She threw her own arms around his neck and clung to him. Gage relished the feel of her, breathed in her unique, delightful scent. He placed his hands on either side of her tear-streaked face and kissed her, just like he had that first time. Kissed her as if this was the last kiss granted him on earth. Kissed her with all the hunger and love stored in his heart. He didn't have the words to say what he was feeling. All he had was his heart, open wide, exposed, vulnerable, and hers. Lindsay responded to his kiss in a way that told him she was his, would always be his. Her body moved against him, and he groaned.
I was coming to ask you to stay in Buffalo Valley. I was coming to tell you I love you,
he told her, their arms around each other, holding on tight.
I'm an outsider.
Yes, foolish and stubborn, too, but along with that, you're honest and honorable. It wasn't just Kevin and those school kids you taught to dream. It was me, too.
You?
He lifted his head enough so she could see the truth in his eyes.
I'd given up the hope of marrying, of having a family. I don't have a lot to offer you, Lindsay.
You have a double portion of everything that's important to me, but it's enough to know I have your heart.
Gage's chest expanded with a sharp intake of breath. It seemed inconceivable that she loved him. And yet the look on her face told him she did. He kissed her again, because it was impossible not to.
Will you marry me, Lindsay?
She nodded. The tears were back, shining in her eyes.
Oh, Gage,
she whispered, smiling up at him. And then it seemed she was crying too hard to speak, and she merely nodded. Rising on her tiptoe, she kissed him. Wrapping his arms about her waist, their mouths joined. Gage swung her around, his joy overflowing, unrestrained. The wind came up then, whirling around them, singing in his ears.
Life had brought him a priceless gift in Lindsay. He was going to accept this gift and love her the rest of his life and beyond.
Thank you for choosing a DA.